Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Let's get ready to Weekend Confirmed with special guest Jeff Cannata.
I'm back, bitches.
Guess who's back?
Oh, yeah.
First name ever, last name greatest. I did that wrong already.
you totally worked that already.
Ever greatest.
I guess actually the special guest is Christian Spicer.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, everybody.
You are special. I've missed you guys.
Aw, we missed you. We missed you too,
sweetie.
I really did miss you guys.
I missed everyone.
So there you go. It's the power lineup today. Christian Spicer sporting his Houston Texans cap.
3-0. We don't need bad refs to get us wins. We just need spotted at 21 points in the first quarter. I mean, the first half. And then we can eke out a win.
They're number one on the power rankings.
Whatever it takes. As long as you got Arian back there, you're in good shape. We have Indy Jeff Mattis here.
Hello, everyone.
And then Twins, Wenty.
Yeah, dudes. So happy to be here. I shall attempt to not ruin the show.
So give us the early first review of Noises Off.
Oh, man. That's the play that I've been doing that has kept me away. And it has been a blast doing that show. If anyone knows that show, there was a film version in the early 90s that's really great. It is like grabbing onto a freight train and trying to hold on. It is the most energetic, crazy, madcap thing I've ever been a part of.
There's some timing involved, right?
And running up and down stairs, and I am a mess by the end of the show.
Awesome.
A blast. If you have a chance at all, if you're anywhere near Rolling Hills Estates, I would love for there to be some Weekend Confirmed listeners that could come see it. It's really, people have been loving it, so.
What's the name of the playhouse?
It's the Norris Center, and you can find all the information at jeffcannata.com, of course.
I'm excited to go because...
Not to be confused with the Chuck Norris Center, by the way.
Which totally no, this show will kick you in the face as well.
Well, yeah, but it's a different...
Different.
Yeah. In a pleasurable way.
I think it kicked you in the side of the head from that promotional picture I saw. I'm glad you've healed since then.
Yeah, he's referring to an optical illusion in one of the photos.
Are you sure it's an illusion? It looks like there's a like big welt on the side.
It does look like that.
Swollen and horrible looking.
Yeah.
Or a plate on the wall behind you.
Something. Are you going to come?
Of course I'm
going to
come.
Now.
So okay. Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. This weekend, next weekend, and
only
then the
two more weeks.
That's it. It's very limited engaging because it's a great playhouse and they're very busy. They have a very full schedule.
They do indeed.
A very full schedule. Mm-hmm. As we have today, so we should stop fiddling around and get on with it. We have games to talk about. Mr. Cannata has lots of stuff he'd like to catch us up on. We have Sony's Day One Digital program to start to discuss. But I think mostly I'd just like to know, Jeff, like what do you feel like you missed out on over the last 3 weeks? Like, what did you want?
A couple of big sequels that I've been playing a lot of. Hopefully people have seen my opinions of them on Totally Rad Show.
Birds 3?
How did you know?
Wait, you didn't miss any TRSs?
I did not miss TRSs. No, that's where my paycheck comes from.
Wow,
Dude, you get all the M&Ms you want?
I do. I get a lot of M&Ms.
It might even be sushi.
Borderlands 2 and Torchlight 2, both of those games, fantastic, so much fun. I've been playing a lot of them, not as much as I would like to because I've been so busy, but definitely played a lot of both and. Both of them had high expectations for, and both of them lived up to my expectations. I'm sure you guys have talked endlessly about Borderlands already.
We have talked a lot about Borderlands. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. Have you followed any of the controversy over the strange mainstream reviews of the game?
No. I thought you were going to talk about the weird bug, but no, I don't know about the reviews thing.
So a couple
it's
of mainstream...
No, yeah, sorry. Go ahead. I was going to say, it's no Call of Duty.
Yes.
is that the general consensus? It's no game that hasn't been released yet.
That was the New York Times, right?
Yeah. It also lacks great multiplayer options.
What?
Yeah.
There's no multiplayer mode. Like when you go into
no
play a game,
right, well,
there's
of course
no...
not. No. How would you ever know to play with other people in that game?
Yeah.
There's nothing that indicates it's ridiculous.
But it's kind of weird, though. I mean, it brings up this whole strange void or valley between mainstream publications who go out and then look at a game like Borderlands 2, which for whatever reason got onto their editorial calendar as, oh, we should review this game. And then they bring in someone to review it. And
but that's the weird thing is most of those places bring in people who are knowledgeable, and usually it's people we know that they bring
in. Frequently is. Yeah. In this case, it wasn't.
Were they complaining that the weapons weren't realistic and stuff?
No. No, the complaint
was... It looked like a cartoon, this game. Yeah.
This well, isn't... actually, very funny that you should bring that up. Another complaint that surfaced in there was that it looked cartoon-like but didn't go all the way to being anime.
Wow.
So...
Strange.
It is really weird. There was another review, and it wasn't the Times. It was another mainstream one.
Jeff's grandpa reviews Borderlands.
No, here's one.
What is this?
I would watch that. Things. I would watch that web series. By the way,
sadly, both my grandpas have passed away.
Jim Sterling wrote a.
Then I'd really watch it.
This review is just like the last one. He just sits there.
No, reviews from the grave.
I meant
Jeff
he came
Canada.
Back. Don't I'm not watching some. Oh man,
it is almost Halloween. Go ahead.
Anyway,
go ahead.
Jim Sterling wrote a long piece on these odd receptions and whether or not it actually meant that games were getting better, because one of the other reviews was about how they really liked the story and the loop was really strong to like pull you in for the next level, for the next weapon, for the next level, for the next perk. But that the writing was just so bad, and that the comedy was just beating you over the face and was trying too hard.
Boy, I really loved the comedy. You guys had
Anthony Birch on.
Yeah, he was on the TRS as well.
Awesome.
Such a great guy. And
in retrospect, by the way, that was one of the coolest shows we've had, by the way. I wish I had sort of appreciated it more in its time, because that was really fun having Anthony on.
Yeah, he's a podcast guy as well, and he's very smart, funny guy. And I appreciated the first game's writing and humor, and I like any game that brings a level of wit to the proceedings, but I thought that they really stepped up the game in the second game.
So how do you feel about the density of the pop culture references in the game? Because it's crazy. Like, it is crazy dense.
But I like that. I don't know. I like that in WoW. I like that.
I like it, too, and it's because the game is ostensibly about going out and shooting gang loads of shit. And like really, I mean, the way you dress that up is to make it funny. If you try to take that too seriously, it'd just be this weighty kind of like it's not Fallout or anything. Like,
no,
it's not an RPG in that sense. It's got character elements. Built, but yeah, it's an action game.
I could how some people don't like that type of humor. I mean, it's people that don't like Family Guy, and I'm blanking on his name, but there's an interesting
Seth
interview.
MacFarlane.
Oh no, I know that on NPR talking about. Comedies and what's timeless versus what's funny necessarily. And a show like Seinfeld, you can watch 20 years from now and it'll still be funny, versus a show like Family Guy, which is extremely funny now, you won't get some of these references. And it just isn't the same. And right now, a lot of comedy is referential style comedy. Mm-hmm. And if you're not into that, or you're playing Borderlands and you don't know what these references are, it's just over your head and it feels much more in your face.
Because like taste
reference,
thing, though.
It is.
Yeah,
but that's what a review would be based on.
No,
that's true.
Yeah,
there's no, and you know my stance on reviews. I find it very difficult to find fault with that opinion. Now the one about like not having multiplayer stuff, I'm like, that's just flat out wrong, and you're misrepresenting the game, which I think is bad. I think that in the context of you're playing a video game, which is in and of itself a part of pop culture, then having all of these references is perfectly fine.
Right.
I mean, it actually fits. And yeah, it's a little heavy-handed. It's funny you brought up Family Guy, because I wonder, there oftentimes the humor is very society and politics oriented, right? It's very much like social satire, political satire.
And a quick reference cutaway form. It's not in the same way The Simpsons will do it with a longer
comment
on society. It's a quick cut to this, and then it's like Obama doing something
like
silly.
Like the time I bought that hot dog off of Gary Coleman on the 4th of July. You know, it's one of those kind of things.
The two orcas are
That's Postal 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, no, it's I see what you're saying, Christian, about that, if you don't get those references, but then, I don't know. I think the majority of people that would be drawn to that game would be probably okay with that.
And stuff. I'm on that side of it. I'm not saying that this is how I feel about comedy, but I understand why someone could not like it. I mean, Double Dragon Neon is the same way, but it references old beat 'em ups.
Yeah.
And if you like that and grew up playing them, you'll get more out of it than if you didn't. And you're just like, well, this is just a beat 'em up.
But with Borderlands, the draw is the loop, is the fun looting, the fun moment to moment, shoot something, get really cool new gun, play with new gun, get new ability, play with new ability. It's that very repetitive but addictive loop. And it's fun because the backdrop for that can just be silly and wacky and add. It doesn't need to add context. It just needs to add a little bit of jocularity.
Right.
So that's why I think that it works particularly well in this game, because it doesn't need to, you don't need to have a Fallout style grand narrative. You know, you can just, you can just have jokes, because I'm already locked into the fun. I don't need, you know.
And on the 12th day, Jeff discovered another gun.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a story to tell.
Yeah, exactly.
Have like a Frodo and Sam moment, like in the middle of the.
Yeah. Have you gotten to Ashley's character? For her name just slipped out of my
Tiny
mind.
Tiny Tina. Is that or something like that?
I don't think it's Tiny Tina.
No. Oh crap.
Well, we have phones and stuff. We'll look it up while
we have
while,
phones.
We will look this thing up during the moment, but she's hilarious.
Yeah.
And as someone else posted like a week ago, she's Andrea, right?
I'm not saying anything.
No, I mean, she's like, it's okay. We can just go ahead. Like that is it kind of makes you think of Andrea a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, in an endearing way, it's cute.
I totally cannot fully disagree with that.
Give that way, can she blow up good?
Nor deny.
I'm just saying, with Halloween coming up, that she could have a very built-in sort of awesome, cool, geeky, cruddy Halloween costume.
That's true.
Just saying.
We've talked a ton about the game as a multiplayer game, and I would say, I mean, look, Andrea and I are friends. So Ariel and I and Andrea and her boyfriend stayed up till 4 a.m. on Saturday playing the game, which was awesome.
How did you guys do that? What, with there being no multiplayer in it?
Oh, it was
you just took turns?
Yes.
That's why I stayed until 4 a.m. We only got through one level.
You shoot like 10 dudes and then give me the controller.
That's exactly what we did. We mostly played the arena. There's an arena you get to in the fridge.
Right.
That basically has this horde mode. And like it's another example of how very much content there is in this game. Mm-hmm. Kevin Dent was tweeting about, you know, how they didn't need to put so much into this game. I'm actually glad that they did, number one, because it's really a great reward for the fans. But number two, it's really impressive because this arena very much is horde mode, and it works very, very well here, because what's cool about horde mode is how many different ways can AI come at you once it starts getting into a procedural land, and then how many different ways can you tackle it? Well,
yeah.
Given the ridiculous amount of absurd weapon combinations you could have, everything changes all the time.
Yeah.
And then trying to make sure that you don't run out of ammo in this limited space, and then switching between weapon to weapon and trying to stay up through all the rounds, it's pretty fun. It's really well done.
It's interesting to me how long we go without these loot fest games, and then in 1 year we get Diablo 3, Torchlight 2, Borderlands 2, and they're all feeding that same itch. Which is an itch that I particularly love to scratch, because it's so much fun to
fast acting and acting, buddy.
Yeah, dude, I love it. I'll scratch it up.
So
I'm scooting my chair over.
So that's my segue into Torchlight too.
Before you go to there, though, because we talked a ton about Borderlands multiplayer, I actually wanted to plumb Mattis's mind for a little bit, because he's been playing single player, and I have a single player character that I started, and I know that like
are you not going back and forth with the same character?
No.
Interesting.
Because I'm really, like, I'm playing my Zero as my multiplayer character, and I'm playing a Gunzerker as, what's his name?
Salvatore.
I'm playing Salvatore as my solo character. And I guess, I know that part of it can be directly attributed to it's just more fun to play together.
Yeah.
But I really find that the single player character at times gets to be a bit of a slog.
Really?
Yeah, like especially health management. Health management becomes a real chore.
Health management, and honestly, a lot of the encounters that you run into it's really beneficial to have a second player that can kite something away from you.
When you're,
you know, for me, a lot of the encounters, especially like larger scale encounters are, even though I'm playing as the Gunzerker, I'm pulling out a sniper rifle, you know, capping a bunch of dudes, and they're basically rushing me, and I'm doing a combination of backpedaling. And then when they get to a certain, you know, distance from me, then I'm switching to, you know, the two gun setup and trying to, you know, circle strafe around stuff and get out of the way. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of, it can be a little frustrating. I'll be perfectly honest. Just and not like, oh, I can never beat this. You know, you can run at something a couple times and eventually take it down, but it just doesn't have that sort of dynamic feel of give and take that you get when you have multiple parties involved, where, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just a bunch of shit rushing at you and, yeah. you know, it's
more dynamic.
It mixes it up a little bit and actually adds another really real tangible layer to the gameplay that you don't get if it's just you.
Do you think a computer-controlled AI would help or hurt in that type? Like, if you want to solo it, should you have the option to have your other characters be bots, more or less?
No, if they could pull it off and make it feel not quite as body as...
Makes me want to bring up Resident Evil 6 so bad.
Yeah, but...
bots.
That would actually be helpful. But again, I think a lot of that is just the... I don't know that you could program a bot to be...
Right.
You know, as...
But, I mean, even if you can't get to that level of having it be as good as another human player, would it help just to have something to, like, kite someone away or just, you know, so you're not bearing the full brunt something?
Yeah, just in terms of the tactical level of the combat. Yeah, absolutely. It's...
Well, I think it also would offer new ability to play with the skill trees. So one of the things that's really cool about this game, and it's great if you are going back and forth, is that you can reset your skill trees all the time, which I applaud them for doing that because it fits in with the character of the game being lighthearted fun. But when you're playing solo, whatever your character's skill tree branch that has healing capabilities is you have to go down that route. Mm. I mean, you just basically have to go. There aren't enough health vials that pop in the course of combat to keep you sustainable. And especially as the difficulty spikes up and down, because one of the things that the game is not at all averse to is, oh, you just finished a combat? No, you didn't. Here's eight more dudes.
Right,
they just spawn in right on top of you. Well, and then one of them is a badass, and the badass dudes are really, really hard versions.
When I found the Gunzerker's health regen thing, one of the ability, I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, really, really a big difference.
My biggest gripe for the sequel, because they did it so well in the first game, is the weird lack of... fast travel points and
they're spread a little further. It's kind of annoying. We have to like journey from region to region to go. Where did I put? Where was the last fast travel spot?
Exactly. And you should be able to fast travel from your menu. You should be able to just pop up the menu and go to any place that you've already gone to, but you can't. Well, and that really annoys me.
And checkpoints are something that I noticed, especially playing single player. There were some mission. There was a. It was fairly early on, and it's I don't know, I won't go through in the whole litany, but the upshot of it was a mission that was probably, you know, multiple areas, probably 30, 40 minutes to complete. And I went through and hit you know, cleared out most of it, and it was late, and I was like, I should go to sleep. And I saw that I passed through one of those checkpoints, those save points.
Yeah.
That's not where I started when I booted up the game.
No, you start
not a save point.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's
and that oh God, I want to go in on a rant so bad.
So rant, let your rant flag fly.
The stupid fucking inaccurate, confusing. If you want to stop here, all unsaved progress.
Yes.
You will lose any unsaved progress. How about telling me some kind of context for that statement? Have I saved? When did I save? How about letting me save right now? That is the stupidest thing, and the fact that it, like, Microsoft forces developers to put that sentence in, even when you could literally go from a screen that says saving to then quit, and it'll go, you can push save and quit, and then it'll save, and it'll go, any unsaved progress. Is there any unsaved progress? Because there shouldn't be, because I just fucking saved, and you, Mr. Computer, should be smart enough to go, oh, you just saved, so I'm not going to tell you that. It is, it's infuriating, and it's across every game.
Games saying, like, you know, the game is saving when you see this icon. It's like a gear spinning, so don't turn off your console. But it's not saving then. It's just checkpointing. So, like, if you die during that playthrough, you'll start from there. But if I go, oh, sweet, I just, air quote, saved, and I turn it off, and you don't.
Yeah. Why does that have to be unclear? Why cannot that just be very clear to the player?
Well, I think what happens in Borderlands is that the way the missions are designed you checkpoint your way through them. And when you save out, whatever loot and so forth you've collected, you are going to still have.
It saves your character.
However, a lot of what it's doing as far as the events that happened over the course of you venturing into the whatever realm of death and doom and destruction it was are all procedural, and it's just carrying all those in local memory, and it's not saving those on. It doesn't.
I was just
it doesn't tab all those.
Yeah,
I was, and I think probably the save file would get huge. By the way, again, if they were like trying to map all that stuff,
but it was the little stuff like having to refight a boss fight.
Yeah,
you know, where you're just like, oh man.
I think it would be cool, although it's not exciting, if in game design that someone who develops the user interface for the save menus looked at a visual representation of, hey, Jeff, if you quit right now, when you restart, here's what's going to look like.
Oh, you mean like how Skyrim does save games? Where it shows you a little fucking picture of where you are and lets me save anywhere, which should be in every game, by the way. I mean, I like the idea of checkpoints, but I've never been confused as to where I saved my game in Skyrim. So let me just fucking do that in every game.
Well, in a big open world game particularly, but yeah.
There's arguments on both sides. I love, as a player, the convenience factor of being able to save anywhere, and I also think this kind of goes to your fast travel point anywhere. Sometimes as a game designer, which I'm not, but putting myself in that headspace, it's like, no, you want the tension of, oh shit, I can die. I can't
That's
save
fine.
Here. Or
That's
fast
fine.
Fast travel,
but
you want
make it
that
clear
grind.
To me.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah.
It should be clear, and they should just say, checkpointing now, or saving now, or what you do
when
get
it,
when you
it
save.
Saves my game, if it doesn't let me save everywhere, which, okay, I'll grant you maybe that adds some tension or some interesting element to the game. But you can still take a snapshot of where you saved my game, and then the next time I load, you can show me that little picture, or, you know, when I'm about to turn off my game, it'll be like, here's where you last saved, here's the place where you last were. So are you cool with quitting right now?
In Borderlands, you can't tell because you're just in a desert. You're like, that looks right.
Yeah. Actually, there's a lot of new environments now. So that's just, that was the...
I know. It was a joke, bro.
It was a joke.
I have a minor complaint related to the loot.
As far as... I want to hear that. But as far as the save thing goes, this is funny because Ariel and I don't worry about that so much. We just watch for like the little symbol which shows you just checkpointed. Mm. So when we're like, who cares? Because who cares where you're going to boot? Like half the time, it's actually more advantageous in this game because when you come back... you are back in Sanctuary.
Right.
And that's cool because I would just rather have restarted there because, like, we're out doing something.
Sometimes, but sometimes not.
We're out doing something. We finish a mission. All we got to do is, like, find a level transition so we get the little pop-up that says, oh, it's checkpoint, and then we, like, save and quit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're working within the constraints of the game rather than the game working within the constraints of you and what's easiest for the player.
Yeah, so it would be easier if I could just save and quit there, and then when I started back up, use fast travel to just push myself right back there without having to mess with it.
Yes.
I don't disagree. Mm-hmm. Oh,
this is how it should work.
You had that, like, I just had the best bite of chocolate cake look.
That's how it should work. Why does it not work that way? Anyway, what was your gripe?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, I the gun stats, and I don't even remember if this is the case in the first game because I got so used to it. But sometimes when you're picking up a gun and you're looking at it, you can't just look at, does this gun do more damage?
Right.
Because then you have to go into the multipliers and the elemental damage and the bonus damage.
That was in the first game as well, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like...
Isn't that fun? I kind of like that.
Well, it I don't know. I mean...
With the amount of loot that you're getting.
I appreciate being able to see all those stats and know exactly, yes, the gun is going to do this, that, and the other thing, and it's going to have these effects. But in terms of raw damage, I would just like to be able to look at a number that goes, hey, this gun is better than this gun.
84 DPS. You just want to see the classic role-playing game thing of this weapon is X DPS.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that the variety of the weapons is so vast that... it's not an easy answer like that. You're not just getting this one is X better. You're getting, well, this one has a different fire rate. This one has a... Da, da, da. And there's so many different factors to come into play that it really...
But if you're comparing, like, say, two guns that do electrical damage, and sometimes if they're fairly close, you know, or similar, you can look at them and go, oh, which one exactly is the more powerful of the two? And
I understand. I think that it's interesting because I would disagree, and I actually... I'm on the exact opposite side. I really like it because I think that they solved the problem of everyone working towards a unicorn weapon.
Right.
Like
because instead of everyone working for a unicorn weapon, it's like every time that, like, what I right now have two fire-based sniper rifles in my inventory for my Zero, and I for the life of me cannot figure out which one I like better, but they both are pretty cool. One of them has a higher elemental fire damage that procs less often. Mm-hmm. One of them has a more frequently procing fire elemental damage, but it's not as high. And the one that has the higher burst damage also has a higher base damage, but it's less accurate. Mm-hmm. And the one that has the more frequent is
higher damage.
But it's like, so you see what I'm saying? It's like I have to think about it. Like, yeah. Which way do I want to go with this?
No, and I totally get it. And stuff like not spelling out, okay, this one is, you know, you compare stuff like reload speed, and that's less important. Like, I don't mind looking at the list and going, okay, this one's slightly faster and this one's a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's just the raw damage. Like, if I have guns in my inventory and I'm like, okay, I need to,
Well, you do see the raw damage right up there at the top. The first thing you say is
well, you see the raw damage, but then all the modifiers and stuff you have to add in your head or, like, I just wish there was a, raw damage total.
It does depend a lot on how you want to play it. You know, like, yeah. For me right now, because I've taken Zero heavy down the, burst damage crit route, mm-hmm. I'm looking at, what's going to get me the highest potential if it hits right and lands a crit. What's the most crazy burst damage I'm going to be able to get?
Right. Yeah, and that's valid, and I totally understand your side of it. And maybe part of it is, the fact that I've been playing mostly solo, and I don't necessarily, when I find a new gun, I don't have somebody to go, hey, look what I found, that's a cool, sure. or a little bit of that social, like, oh, should I use this or use electrical damage or use fire damage? Like, maybe I'll, mix it up a little bit. And it's really just, when I'm playing by myself, it boils down to, okay, how can I kill shit the fastest? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I guess it's not really a complaint. It's just something that doesn't quite work for me as well in a single player solo experience, because I just want to get to killing the next thing.
Did you play Diablo 3?
I did.
So how would you compare the two?
One's a first person shooter.
No, but
neither are Call of Duty.
From the standpoint of playing a single player, because I think that Diablo 3, it pretty well spells out for you, hey, this weapon you just picked up does this much damage. It's this much better than that last weapon.
Right. Well, I mean, Diablo, again, for me, was mostly a single-player experience, so I appreciated that, being able to just know when I picked up a new whatever that it was better than the one that I was carrying, mm-hmm. or not. Or maybe it was the same but did something slightly different.
But it's a little apples and oranges, because Diablo, your weapon is basically there to augment your skill set, and in Borderlands, weapons themselves are the draw. The difference in how a weapon feels... operates, how far I can shoot, how much spread you're getting, all those things, wherein, that's constricted to your class in Diablo. You're basically right. Just getting a modifier that is...
Well,
there's a little bit,
you're getting the, point of the sword. You're getting, that's the, the point of contact with the attack, whatever it might be, whether it's a staff or a
right.
bow.
And there's certain differences as far as attack speed and whatnot, but...
It's sort of the conduit through which you're releasing stuff.
Exactly. And in Borderlands, it really is, the difference in how each weapon operates mm-hmm. and feels is much more important. And that's what I like about it. Yeah. I like how differentiated those weapons can be from each other.
No, I totally agree. I mean, when you boil it down, all of Diablo's weapons kind of boil down to a click or a button press. Whereas, the guns in Borderlands are like, okay, this one looks bigger or feels bigger or has a smaller clip, and you actually feel that stuff pretty immediately.
It's one of the nice things about aiming. I mean, it's one of the nice things about having a first-person interface for a point-and-click looter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, I did not intend for this to become the Borderlands 2 show, but we obviously, there's so many, there's lots and lots of stories to tell out of Borderlands 2. And I think that's one thing that's interesting, and actually this is a comment that we'll maybe come back to, is one of my user comments I wrote down was interesting about a person who has gotten out of the day one, I gotta buy a game right when it comes out release cycle. And one of the points they brought up was how, it's really difficult to have a meaningful conversation about a game in the first few weeks it's out, because you get caught up in the hype and there's all these pieces of things you want to talk about, the memes. And I feel like while this was Borderlands 2, again, we talked about it in a little better articulated depth, and there's some points that came up here I thought were kind of good. Well, I want to hear about Torchlight 2 when we come back, because I haven't even gotten into that yet, because I spent my playcation day doing FIFA.
Oh boy.
Which was kind of, it was awesome. I had such a good time, which is weird for a sports game because usually it gets my frustration meter going. Anyway,
footy.
Stick around. We have lots more Weekend Confirmed yet to come. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. That really wasn't my best ad read ever, was it? It's kind of broken.
Bad.
By the way, also, version 2.0, like, I got to cut a new one of those. It's, that thing's ancient. We're up to, I don't know, we're iPhone 5 now, though. I know, iPhone 5, baby.
I'm trying to figure out a way to change my email signature to say sent from my iPhone 5 and not just sent from my iPhone. So that everyone knows I have an iPhone 5. Because what's the point of having an iPhone 5?
The thing that's awesome about that.
They don't know.
They don't know.
Yeah, it's like.
Can I add that to my Twitter? Like, tweeted from
my iPhone
5?
You should do that and then turn on location awareness for all your social apps. And that way people will know where you are when they want to mug you to get your iPhone 5.
You're going
to
get so many, like, honest responses to that.
I've been doing a version of that type of guy on stage just for this past week or so. And it's worked 50-50 where some people see through it and see that I'm making fun of that person while I am that person. And some people are just like, you're just a conceited asshole, man. I'm like, both of those are true.
You should see if you get Samsung to sponsor that. I hear they're into the whole, like, Apple hate video.
Yeah. That commercial is great.
No.
It's really
awful.
It's great.
Why is it awful? It's a pretty smart.
Interesting.
It makes fun of consumerism and the freaking.
Why is it awful, Christian?
Yeah.
Okay. He's seething.
It's awful.
He really is. I've never seen him. Defend your apples.
Well, I do love Apple, but the commercial from an objective standpoint is I hate commercials that try to trick stupid viewers into thinking they're honestly doing a real, talking to real people on real streets.
I don't think that's what they're doing. Do you think that's what they're, do you think those any of those people seem real?
They set up this line and they're like, they don't present.
They're all so obviously acting.
It's like, it's like if Saturday Night Live did a sketch about it.
Totally different. Yeah. It's a sketch versus a commercial. You're going to something expecting parody and satire and not a representation of something.
He's so serious.
I'm deadly serious. And another
difference, like how you think people are watching commercials like, oh,
watching passively, and they see it in the background, and they see a line of what looks like a fake Apple store, and they don't realize that it's a fake Apple. The other thing I don't like about it, this commercial. I love the Samsung Galaxy S3, by the way. It's a fantastic fucking phone. I feel the way
it's enormous.
It is, but it's good. It's great. Whoever designed
really,
this.
Really, Garnet? That was way too easy. It's enormous. You're really hopping on that phrase?
Knocked it out of the park.
Whoever designed this ad campaign, I don't like it when people make people that use the thing seem stupid. And they're not saying that one device is better or not. They're saying, hey, you're an idiot, you person. And
no, they're saying it's your mom's device now. It's saying it's not cool anymore. They're saying it's what your mom is into.
Well, that's one tag at the end. But I say to that, if there's a device that's still cool, that's simple enough for my mom to use, guess who won? Apple. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Well,
two, Apple's commercial, Mac versus PC. And I wish I could think of something that wasn't an Apple example. Because people say, oh, well, that was making fun of users also. No, they personified a device and pointed out flaws within each device as people. It bothers me when companies make fun of users, whatever it is. And I hated Nintendo Sega, too, for the same thing back in the day. Because I was a little kid that hated fucking Sega. No. But don't talk shit about the people that play the thing when you're trying to woo them over. It's like, hey, Jeff Cannata, you like your iPhone? Well, you're a fucking idiot. Guess what? Come get our Samsung, because then you won't be. P.S. We think you're a fucking idiot. Hate it. Listeners, let me know.
I know. He's really fired up.
It bothers me.
What did you think? Did you see the, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel, did a man on the street interview thing where he was basically
that was
like,
hilarious.
Oh, check out the new iPhone 5, blah, blah, blah. And it was just iPhone 4.
That was the other
And everybody's Jimmy. Like, oh, this is so amazing. And like, I'm so impressed. And
that segment's faked.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
No.
But still, different context.
But yeah, it's
a funny comedy bit.
Right, but I mean, that's sort of the same.
So many people hate me right now. It doesn't even matter. I'm sitting here Apple products.
If the thing weren't bigger, I don't think most people would know the difference. I honestly.
That, see, is what she said.
I like it. I think Samsung's phone is fantastic. I think this commercial is a piece of crap. We can talk all about it. You can tweet at me or email me all you want, and I will continue this conversation on
this week's advertising confirmed.
Yes.
Or you can just be awesome, like Torchlight 2, and then you don't have to worry about it because everyone's just going to flock to you in public opinion and say, this is what Diablo 3 could have, should have, would have been.
For a third of the price.
Yeah. $20.
That's a hell of a lot of game for $20.
I hate having to connect to the internet to... Oh, wait. No, I don't have to do that.
Don't have to.
That's awesome.
Wow. What a concept. You mean a game?
But have you seen the fucking commercial for it? When they say that they have people in line waiting to buy Diablo in a store, and then they're like, I'm just kidding.
I think the thing
is, though, there's an interesting comparison to be made here, though, before we get too snarky, because I think it's become hip and cool to diss Diablo 3 in the insider community.
Yeah, it has.
And I love that game with my whole heart. Still.
Whatever, dude. And you also got an iPhone. You should step up to the Galaxy S3 crew.
And I will say this. Torchlight 2 is fantastic. I am enjoying the hell out of it. But I was surprised as to how different a game it is from Diablo 3. It is very different. It's a very different experience. And
it has
colors. Diablo has colors.
Just kidding.
One is fun.
The
pets rule.
I do. Mr. Peepers is pretty great. Mr. Peepers is my pet ferret that my engineer has.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he rocks.
You chose him. You chose the ferret because he also has like
an engineer would have a ferret. Yeah. Come on. I mean, it's obvious.
Clearly, an engineer would have a ferret.
And I picked the engineer because of his sweet stash, bro. His sweet stash.
Stash of what?
Anyway,
you have to ask.
Guys, yeah, good point. Derailing my comments here. The thing about Torchlight 2
is I was
very worried that, because, you know, it was supposed to come out before Diablo.
Yep.
And I thought, those guys are smart. Come in, swoop in. Everybody's all excited about Loot Fest, Click Fest game. Swoop in, steal some of that thunder. And then all of a sudden it was like delay, delay, delay. And then Diablo came out and I loved it so much. And I was like, oh man, it's going to be so difficult going to Torchlight after Diablo 3. I think they kind of killed themselves. But enough time passed that now I come to Torchlight and it's a refreshing breath of fresh air. And it is so different. It's such a different kind of experience. The real gameplay element of mixing ranged and melee for every class is it really feels different than what Diablo offers. And the fact that Diablo is so skill-centric, and I think that Torchlight, while the skills are awesome and I use them frequently, it's not the same experience. And being able to switch up your builds in Diablo so much and really testing that out is what made me love that game. But the skill system in Torchlight where, man, it is... I am thinking about every point because there's so many options all the time of where I'm putting my points when I level up that
sounds awesome.
Which I think has had the opposite effect a little. I'm very little into the game, but having talked to people that have played more, where you have so many options, you almost don't care as much.
I don't know. Like, for me, I care a lot more because I'm like, oh my god, where am I going to put all these points?
I've been looking down the tree because you can definitely. I mean, I don't know how many points you can accrue throughout the course of the game. I mean, maybe you can fill most of that up, but it seems to me like
you got to make a decision now.
Like, I'm either going to get good at shotguns or I'm going to get good at my pea shooters or whatever. I'm playing the Outlander, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That's a cool class.
It is, although there's not a whole lot of melee action with him.
But I thought all characters had viable options for melee and range.
They might if I equip the right weapon, but I'm always just cruising around with some sort of range thing. I mean, the shotgun is sort of like the equivalent of the melee weapon because it's so short range and it fires and spreads. So, that's kind of what I've been using. But
It's funny we're talking about time because my perception of what happened here originally was, oh, God, they're delayed. Oh, God, they're delayed. And then looking at response to the final product and having, I haven't played it. I've watched quite a bit of it being played. Ozzy was playing it and then checking it out. It looks like somehow or other, I guess their publishing deal must have been really good because it looks like somehow or other they had the money to just sit around and polish the game and polish the game and polish the game and polish the game. And that was not what I thought was happening. I thought there was,
problems.
I was worried. And instead of being worried, it's like, holy shit, these guys had the deal that they wanted, which is time to sit there and really get the game right.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of impressive.
Yeah, it feels good. It's even just the small details of like when you get a crit kill and the dudes just explode, so much of that wonderful feedback that you expect from Blizzard, you know, right. Blizzard, you go, oh yeah, they're gonna nail that stuff. But having a $20 game and that, you know, obviously,
why do you say it like it's derogatory? See, that we remember these conversations we used to have, you know, especially if you listened back to like the One Up Yours days. Like, why does a $20 game have to be like it's a badge? It's a $20
well,
game.
Well, I think that's what Torchlight is disproving. I think that's what it's, and hopefully it'll be so successful that there'll be other games that follow in that.
Yeah,
that path.
I would love for that.
And what I'd like to see is, you know, it happen on the reverse too, at the other end, where you've got these $60 piles of crap that somebody takes a look at and goes, you know what, maybe if we sold this for $20-$30, we wouldn't draw so much ire or piss so many people off. Or
well, know. That's been argued many times.
Yeah, that's not
many
happen,
times,
but,
and it's probably not going to happen. No. So now we talked about story in Borderlands 2. We talked about, and we once upon a day talked about story in Diablo 3. So you've got two very different approaches there. Diablo 3, obviously, despite what you might think looking at it from the outside, takes itself very seriously, very high fantasy. Borderlands, obviously, not taking itself seriously, doing pop culture reference. Mm-hmm. What do you feel about where Torchlight 2 comes in on the story meter?
It's somewhere in the middle. I mean, it takes itself pretty seriously in a lot of ways. But
give me like the 10,000-foot view of the story.
You want to know the honest to God answer is I ignore a lot of story in that game. Mm-hmm. I ignore it more than I ignored the Diablo story.
I do too. I get quest. I look down at loot rewards. Yeah. I look down at what I got to do.
Play it like an MMO.
Boom.
I play it like an
and
MMO.
I did that with Diablo as well. Though.
Oh, did you?
I did not like give two rats asses about the history of whatever.
I just found the voice acting to be so much fun and the cutscenes to be awesome that I really paid a lot of more attention in Diablo. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say the voice acting is bad in Torchlight. It's just kind of forgettable. And I don't know. And I also, this is terrible bias to expose in myself, but I feel like the art style, while I enjoy it in Torchlight, somehow gives me an excuse to ignore the story. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure. I mean, is that a bad thing? I mean, it sounds to me almost
I'm
like
still having a great time
for this sort of game. I almost think that the story receding out of sight is more desirable than it being something that's getting
shoved
in
down
your
throat. Yeah.
And not working. So if you like, if you're just having fun with the game and the world's working and the weapons are fun and the, you know, the game mechanic is really working for you, then that's fine.
I just wish these games would sort of realize that there's probably a better way to deliver a plot point or a story point than here's a wall of text while we read it to you. You know, get punchier, get clever with the, you know, more clever, more concise with the dialogue so that people aren't like, you don't have time to get bored with it. You can just, you know.
Are either of you multiplayering it?
Does it have multiplayer? Yeah. Yes. Is it like Call of Duty?
It's like Call of Duty.
Okay.
I would like to. I don't know how much you guys have been talking about Guild Wars 2.
Not much, because I. You know what happened is I started playing Guild Wars, and then all this other shit started coming out.
Sure.
And
well,
I haven't.
It's fall.
I haven't gone back into it. I'm
Guild
so.
Wars
I keep
is,
looking at it, and going, I want to play some.
But you're not paying for it. Which is
that's
nice,
what's
right?
awesome. The coolest part about Guild Wars is I don't feel the least bit of guilt or remorse, and I know the game will still be awesome next week and the week after and the week after, and I don't have to like be freaking out like, oh my God, I'm paying $14 a month for this thing.
Right. Well, the reason I brought it up, first of all, you guys are going to hear me talk next week about Mists of Pandaria because I'm going to be playing that this week.
Really? And why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because it's new and it's wow and there's...
But why?
There's five more levels for me to learn.
Do you really care about WoW anymore?
We're gonna find out. I have it sitting on my.
When was the last
computer?
Time you logged into WoW?
That is a great question.
We'll find
and
out
so
Saturday
when,
if
when
Jeff
do you
let us play.
When do you think the last time you logged into WoW was?
When did the last expansion come out? Like 6 months after that, probably.
Yeah, and so how much appeal does the World of Warcraft really hold at this point to you?
I'm gonna find out. I'm genuinely interested in
you're gonna build playing. A panda
and hello,
yeah I'm gonna build
yeah,
a panda.
Pandas.
Did you
panda?
Buy your expansion?
No.
Would you have?
No.
That's pretty telling.
But it arrived, and I'm gonna play it.
Sure, no, certainly. I've been being excited about it. But there's a level of like pre-ordering it or you know wanting
I wouldn't
to
have.
Plunk down.
I've heard,
and really the reason for that is Guild Wars 2 and Terra. Those games I love and would play.
But
lots
you're not
more.
Playing Terra.
Well, that's only because it needs a subscription, and for me to have a subscription, I have to go, okay, well, there's a window of time that is not filled with other games
that
I can put
into. That is the exact reason that when I look at Guild Wars right now, I'm just like, oh, it's cool. I'm okay with that. It's like, no big deal.
Right.
Whereas, like, Terra, it was the same thing. It's like, I'm not going to spend another $14 a month on this because I might not play it this month, but I really liked the game. And I would be perfectly willing if they had the right microtransaction system that if I wanted to play over the weekend to spend a buck or two to like be able to accelerate through some stuff or whatever, that game is the game that I would actually probably fall victim to that in.
I wonder if Guild Wars almost falls victim of its own successful problem because you're not paying for it, you never feel obligated to go back.
There's a lot of people playing it though.
It still is popular, but like, you know what I mean? If you're paying for something, you're like, oh crap, I do have my Terra subscription this month. I do have a little bit of time.
Oh, I see what
I'm
going
to play it right now. You're like, well, I can get into Guild Wars 2 whenever.
The gym membership philosophy, right? Like, oh, I'm going to get a gym membership, and that means I'm paying for it, so I should use it. And then
I don't want to get too far away from Jeff's comment, which is why I brought up Guild Wars 2, which is
or Pandaria.
No, I sidestepped into that as well, and that was my bad. What you brought up was the sort of or at least what I took from it was the quest system, mm-hmm. and in Torchlight and in lots of other games that you feel like there could be a better way to convey story than just the way games have been doing.
Right.
And I think Guild Wars 2, I want some people to steal from that game. And I think that it is such an interesting way of eschewing the convention of walk to a guy, get a quest, read some text, go do what he told me to do. And that that can pervade other genres. It doesn't have to just stay in MMOs. Like the idea, it can be in any other role-playing game or even in action games, the idea of entering a new area and have it be motivated by exploration, like get me into a new area and then have stuff happen. And now I have purpose because there is stuff happening in this world that I am now invested in because of my proximity to the crazy stuff that's happening, rather than, hey, I found a new area. There's a dude with an exclamation point over his head. Let me go walk over to that guy, read a block of text that explains what's happening in the world, and then he tells me to go kill 3 furbles.
What you do.
Right. Here's what's happening. Here's
fucking
what you do.
Furbles.
Go. Right?
Those bastards.
And with Guild Wars, I'm walking into a new area. I'm encountering this crazy action. Yeah, you know, something pops up on my screen that can tell me to kill furbles if that's the quest thing. But oftentimes what's happening is that I feel like the world is happening around me and I'm a character in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that I get invested in my own story because that's how I walked into this place. And I, you know, I walked up to the farm and there was a fight happening at the farm and I hopped in and helped John.
And that's why when they do quests where an NPC will follow you and while you're on the way, they're like, follow me. And as you're following them, they're like, okay, so we're going to this thing. That's way more engaging to me than the brick of text. Go do this. Come back, get another brick of text and a couple of loots.
Right.
Yeah,
and I think that could be a real revolution in how story feels motivated by my actions rather than what games have fallen into so much, which is you woke up and you have no memory, and so walk over to the dude and find out who you are and where you are and what's going on. Rather than I'm a guy, I'm in a place, I walked into that place and the shit was already happening, and you know, and now I'm a part of it. You know, which is, it seems much more interesting.
Partly it does depend on the game and how it's designed to be played. So the block of text thing, while not the most elegant solution for a playthrough, is exactly what you want for a game that's designed to be played through multiple times. A la Borderlands 2, a la Diablo. Because if you had to go through all of those narrative-driven, hand-holding, let's take a walk down memory lane sort of things, the first time, you're like, this is fucking cool.
But
I'm into it.
That's not really how it works. It's not. It doesn't hold your hand.
Your Guild Wars doesn't. I was talking about specifically about what Jeff was talking about.
Oh,
okay. Like, if you're like all those things, like if you had more the more interactive scenes like that, the more that's going to get in the way. If you come back the third time, do you really care about having that conversation with that person when you walk in there?
It entirely depends on how you're handling it. Like if you look at like Grand Theft Auto 3, right?
Or Half-Life,
sorry, GTA 4, you would fail a mission, redo the mission, and on your drive to the thing, you'd get a whole different dialogue thing, and they would do 2 or 3 of those bits for each mission. And yeah, it sucks to have to redo all that, but there are ways to make that fresh. I mean, even in Torchlight, you look at a brick of text, and they have keywords highlighted in the brick of text. So while the person's reading it or not, you can just go, okay, creature you know, area, boom, I'm out, you know. And I mean, I guess I just think there's a more elegant way to handle that than just dumping this.
I think,
you know,
it.
I see your point though. Being able to skip that stuff is.
I'll come back to it next week, because overwhelmed though I may be, I'm definitely playing some Torchlight 2 this weekend. I mean, I was going to play it yesterday on my staycation, but I got drawn into FIFA because it's so good. It's so
How do they handle quests in that game?
Good. They handle them through a skill test system.
Oh.
Which actually addresses one of my biggest complaints. So, by the way, If you have a tablet, you should pick up the latest issue of GameQ. That's our magazine that we put out from Gamefly, and it's totally free. It's on Android. It's on iPad. It'll be on Kindle Fire. Should be by the time you're listening to this, but maybe a little longer because it's a little more detailed tech getting it into the fire. Mm-hmm. But we're going to be there. Anyway, one of the stories that we commissioned was a story that I've been wanting to someone to explore for a long time. This idea that sporting games have gotten so sophisticated in the way they simulate the actual professional sport that even for a fan of the sport, it's really challenging to try and play them and enjoy them the way you know you should be able to. And let me explain what I mean. You can watch, I'm going to take hockey because I'm not the most versed at hockey, but I know just enough about hockey to know that I can't play NHL worth a shit. And I know that because I don't even know the right way to play the game on the ice as a pro. I don't know what my attacking strategy should be.
It like a six-year-old soccer game, which
yes.
is like
chase the puck, perfect analogy.
Chase the ball, yeah. Everybody clump on it,
and that doesn't
icing.
Work. What is icing? Yeah. Right, and remember that was great for Blades of Steel. That was the bomb. You loved it because it was super awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it doesn't work in NHL 13 because NHL 13, it knows how, the AI of all of the players that are out there on the ice at the same time know what they're supposed to be doing, why they're doing it, when they're doing it, what they're supposed to be doing. Of course, we have arguments with the AI and all that sort of things, but it's the same. It's how do we get across this point? How do we get past this piece of now? Yeah, that not only is there stick skill, but by the way, to really enjoy this game, you have to have a pretty decent idea of how at a pro level, this sports game plays.
Well, do you think that that's because these games are aimed now at established fans of the sport rather than video gamers?
Well, and they're being built like sedimentary rock, right?
That's
or,
true.
Or a tree, you know, you get another layer and another layer and another layer.
Exactly
and sometimes they tweak the core a little bit, but it's even, you know, Madden feels like there's so much stuff in there that just feels so overwrought and could be so streamlined and stuff. And you just want to, you know, and I think that's, you know, part and parcel to the yearly franchise thing. You get caught in that rut and you've got to make your yearly profit and there's no time to go, okay, you know what, we're going to release a roster patch this year, forego the millions of dollars that we'd make on this yearly franchise and, you know, reinvent the wheel and hopefully not alienate our giant fan base. I almost want a new player to be able to come in. It'd be easier for other players to come into the game or other developers to come into the game and make, you know, these exclusivity contracts, for example, mm-hmm. I think are, you know, really doing damage to certain franchises.
I think you could definitely point to the NFL license and say that. Although they mm-hmm. definitely improved a lot in this generation. So let's take the NFL as an example. Even let's say you're a reasonably devout NFL fan.
It was a catch.
And you know Section 8, Paragraph 5, Sentence 1 about the simultaneous catch thing or whatever it might be. Anyway, let's say you know all that. So you at least know what you're supposed to do when you come up to the line on offense, what sort of reads you're going to, you know, you have some idea what reads to make, you're looking at the defense, all that kind of stuff. Nowhere does Madden take the time to explain to you, here's how to use our game, here's how to use our interface to make those adjustments at the line. Yes, there are a number of adjustments you can make, and people right now are saying, oh, but it's right there on the control map and you can figure it out. That's all well and good. How do you have all of these diverse options, all of these myriad things you can do, and never bother to just get the player acquainted with them, and here's how they work, and here's how they would do it? It's kind of silly.
And a lot of those things aren't even essential to the game, right? I mean, they would be essential if you're one of those hardcore sim fans who's like, I want.
They're pretty essential to being successful at playing any of these games.
Yeah, to play competitively, but I think
even against the AI.
Well, oh yeah, yeah. No, but I think that there are some things that it's like, I don't want to have to worry about as a casual player of certain sports, you know, franchises that like hockey. I'm not as familiar. Like you, like you know, a lot of people are with hockey.
Americans,
yeah, basically. But like, I want to be able to jump in and enjoy it without.
So would you play a game of hockey if you felt like when you hopped in and played it, you were having fun and playing reasonably?
I played the shit out of it on Sega on the Genesis.
Yeah,
because it was just ridiculous. It bare no relation.
And I have no, and I have no problem with like having those layers so that you can peel them back like an onion and go, wow, I'm like getting much better at this, and I've learned all my favorite players, and like I know that they're good, and I'm getting into the stats, and now I want more for my game. I mean, I don't know if that's two separate games or if you have a game that elegantly has, kind of eases you into it a little bit more.
It is part of what EA Sports was trying to accomplish with the Wii versions of games. We remember they had the Wii Play versions of their sporting games, and people poo-pooed them, at least amongst the more hardcore fans. But maybe that was a step towards the right direction, but that just wasn't working. Now, what they've done in FIFA, and this is what I applaud them, is they've gone the other direction, is they're really working hard to explain how to play the game. So they have skill games, and the skill games go through three levels and then a challenge level, and they show you how to do what you need to do in the game to be successful. That's they teach you how to do passes, and then so first, like the first level of ground passing is very much is exactly as dumb and stupid as you think it would be. It is, hold the button to pass the ball to this guy.
But is that tedious?
No, because they turn it into little games. So it's little mini games of like hit the target.
Isn't IQ?
What's Madden IQ? That's gone.
Remember? But I mean, they've tried it in Madden. I feel like most people were angered.
And they didn't really do a good job at it, and they didn't put it together the right way.
I feel like this is an interesting...
You don't have to do this.
Maybe deeper issue for you, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but this came up, was it Guild Wars 2, where you wanted more instruction on how to layer your abilities? I feel like you're the type of gamer that wants to see more of that, like, done well and hand-holding. And I remember after that episode, people were like, well, that's what the internet's for. You're playing an MMO, or that's the joy of figuring it out. And I feel like it's an interesting... I mean, is that where you feel as a gamer, I feel like this isn't limited to sports for you. Like, you don't want the Call of Duty annoying tutorial.
I'm almost annoyed that you brought it back to the hand-holding thing, because I thought I had sort of solved that. I mean, it's not about hand-holding. I don't want someone to play the fucking game for me.
Right.
I want to know how to play the game. I want to know how to play the game so that I can start working at it and getting better. And especially sports, which are about practice, which are about repetition, then you've got to give me the repetition tools so that I can practice and get better at it. And just going in and playing raw games doesn't really help me get better if I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
What about what League of Legends is doing and what Dota seems to be doing, which is leveraging the community and incentivizing the community?
I think League of Legends idea is, or it's Dota that's doing that, right?
I think League of Legends is instituting something similar, right?
I want to see it, right?
I think they're genius. Yeah. I think it's absolutely genius.
Prestige or whatever. I don't know if they're calling it prestige, but something like that in League of Legends is you get awarded by being like a good mentor.
I think that's really smart.
I mean, I could work
especially
in a Madden
in those
or a
MOBA
FIFA.
Games, because the MOBA games are pretty off-putting. Now, the thing about the MOBA games is that you're already playing with teammates, and so you have people right there who can be like, hey, dude, like right now on the middle lane, I need you to do this, or right now on the top lane, I need you to do this.
Or even, I mean, another version of this, another way to look at this is sort of what Elite is about, or a part of what Elite is about for COD.
Call of Duty.
Which is... we have this huge resource of videos you can watch and statistics you can check out. So if you want to dig deeper, you can learn and educate yourself.
And there's
right
a ton
here
of information
the
out there.
Engine.
I mean, look, I've been all over Operation Sports lately. I've been like yesterday, one of the big things I was into was this whole long discussion thread about how to set the sliders to get the best game out of your FIFA to like have it build like a real, a better simulated game of football on the pitch. And that's all cool. I mean, I'm into doing all those things. I'm talking about the point where the controller meets my hands while I'm watching and playing the game, having a little bit more put together, here's how our game works, here's how to play it, and here are these skills that you need, especially, and it's a lot different, especially in a sports game, because a sports game, I mean, look, just like a professional sports player has to go out on the pitch and practice his dribbling skills, I need to sit down and practice my stick skills and know, hey, if I've got the left trigger pulled and I'm going to slow, then I want to pull a right trigger to do a face up and juke around this guy this way and then kick the right stick this way to get this move. I got to learn all of those moves.
Well, and even beyond that, you got to have game, like know the game theory as to why you're doing that.
And exactly. Right, so then there's the management part.
But that's the weird razor's edge that these games have to walk, because there's plenty of gamers like you that want
to invest time to get better. And there's the other equally legitimate desire, which is I sat down in a video game. I want to be able to do awesome shit.
I want to play soccer.
I want to do awesome shit by pushing a button.
Well, that's why you need a game that either does both or two separate games.
Yeah.
All right, well, I wound up spending almost all of my playcation yesterday in the skills test. And when we come back on the other side, I'll talk about FIFA for a minute, and then we can move on and do, I don't know, we got a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about. So don't go anywhere. The second half of Weekend Confirmed is coming right up.
It's Jim Manson, Phil Sims.
Finding good success.
Phil Sims, Phil Sims, Phil.
He is the worst color man on the planet.
What he's doing, is throwing the ball.
Listen to him. Listen to him. Listen to him.
Finding good success.
They're making some strides. Listen to him. Listen to him.
Finding good success.
I apologize to Phil Sims' family, but it's true.
He just ruined it for everyone playing Madden this year.
How appropriate that we would have had that break right there. Too bad you didn't get a chance to do a referee song. That would have been gold right there.
Oh my God! Talk about something that would spread over the web, huh?
Yeah, I've never thought I would be so excited to hear that Ed Hockley was coming back to the sport.
The dude is—he's a specimen.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So I spent almost all of my playcation day, which I'm going to take some more of these. Like that was the best idea ever. I mean, I may not have gotten a proper vacation this year, and that's fine, but like these playcation days, pretty fucking awesome. I'm not gonna lie.
Are you scheduling them into your calendar? Like
I'm going to now. I'm at least taking like four or five more the rest of this fall. Hell yeah, they're good.
This is the benefit of having a girlfriend who's a gamer, because you can do that.
Why?
Because that's awesome that you can have
a playcation. Well, the problem is that she's so head down in getting All-Stars finished that we couldn't take we're not taking a vacation. There's no time. We kept going, "Oh, maybe." No, it's not going to happen.
Has she tried caffeine pills?
Has she tried caffeine? What?
Saved by the Bell.
Oh. Really?
There's never any time. Really? He said the line.
Really?
I just tied the beautiful bow and gave him a present.
Really?
Or at least it wasn't a Degrassi reference. They're really in trouble. All right. Anyway.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You're better off.
So I got into FIFA, and damn, the game is good. It's so good. And I think the reason I was really enjoying the skills tests is that, or the skills games, is that having that place to go practice. Most of the EA Sports games are guilty of just giving you, here's this practice field, go practice and run some plays. And having the ability to go in and run something that was actually making me work through the finger and dexterity and mental jumps to like, oh, here's how I need to work through the situation was really helping me when I went back to the pitch to play some. And I was having a great time playing because I was seeing like direct results of, oh, I just worked on this. Now I can do this in real life. It's almost like if you ever took a musical instrument when you're like running through, okay,
your scales.
You're going to run scales. You're going to run scales. And then finally you're doing, you know, some piece and you're like, oh, now I know what my fingers fall over the notes exactly what they're supposed to because I've been practicing this so much.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I practice that much. And it's certainly, I understand exactly why when I go online, I get destroyed at FIFA. I'm not going to lie. Obviously, I don't have time to devote beyond that. But just a little, you're talking about time balance, a little bit of work put in there netted me tremendous results on the pitch. So whereas I had just started off and I was like back where I usually have been for the past 3 or 4 years playing soccer games, you know, passing the ball around, I'll get it down, there'll be some shots, that kind of thing, from spending 6 or 7 hours just going through all the skills tests and really working on, you know, where and when to cross, how especially like a lot of it is touch. You know, how much to put on the ball to get this far into the pitch, how far to send it different distances, to lay the ball out there when I wanted to. Such a huge difference. Such a huge difference. To the point that, you know, the crowning moment was in the last game I was playing last night. I've been playing Tottenham because my friend Alex got me into football years ago, and he's a Tottenham supporter, so I needed a team to my team. And their rival is Arsenal. And oh, this is another thing, this game, like there's so many things. That was the thing I wanted to talk about. Why FIFA to me is so much better than Madden. And it's reflected in, I swear the team that makes FIFA just seems to me, gives me the impression that they are so much more fans of the sport that they're making than the team at Madden. And I know the team at Madden loves NFL. I'm sure you'd have to love NFL to work on the product all the time. But I so much feel like they get still, even with the physics engine edition, drawn into like, what are we doing for next year? That sedimentary rock thing that you were talking about, yeah. Right? Whereas, holy shit, man, there's so many cool things in FIFA that are reflective of what you would want as a fan. One of the coolest is that when you just go to play a match just for fun, it's tied in. If you're tied into the internet, then they're doing what I've thought that I wanted in Madden for years, which is whether or not your players are on form. And on form means, are they playing up to their skill set? So, you know, you're playing Lionel Messi, right? And so he's got his attributes and here are all his rankings. Well, they're watching the games over the last 2 weeks or so and determining whether he's playing to form, above form, or below form, and putting all of that data for every player on every team that's in the game in, so that when you go to play your favorite team right now, it's playing the way you would expect it to be playing based on what you've been watching. That's so fucking cool.
I wonder if imagine? That's a tangible thing, though. Like, could I tell?
If you were a big fan, you,
I guess. Well,
can you imagine right now, let's say you go play, Madden, and instead of them boosting like Mike a player Vick. Here and there, right?
Yeah.
It's like they've got everything. And right now, it's the only way they get those with roster updates.
Yeah.
So this is cool. It's right there. It happens. Yeah. It's this inform thing. I think it's an incredibly cool thing. I really like the way that works. And then it's all so well stitched together that when I'm playing this match, as my players were getting worn down, in the second half, I brought in Dempsey off the bench because Clint Dempsey, no. Because I needed to move use him at center field.
You needed somebody dreamy on your line.
Can't buy me love.
But because of the delay in him getting over to England from his American contract, he's out of form. And the announcers and everything were stitched into it. They knew it. They were like, oh, well, you know, he's a little bit out of form, but the manager is probably telling him just to go out there and have a good time. And you're like, it's so...
That's a piece of fan service that I bet just totally resonates. Like,
it's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
And then the coup de grace is that in the 89th minute, I managed to have like one of those keeps you coming back moments where... He got just enough on the edge in a 1-1 tie to loop a little. And it was everything. It was like all the stuff I've been practicing, like putting a little bend on the shot and getting it like right around person, like got into the box, put a beautiful bend on this thing, dropped it right in the top drawer, scored it, won the game with Dempsey. And the announcer is like, well, that's going to go a long way to getting him back into form. I'm like, holy shit, this is fucking amazing. It's like these dudes are live. This whole thing is happening and it's real.
Can you turn that off? If you want to play with your favorite player,
you can.
Okay.
There, and as a matter of fact, it's right there. That, like when you go to do a match, it's like Y to be connected and Y to unconnect you. So you can play with the base rankings that are on the disc.
Funny.
Sometimes
it's good timing.
If you're pissed off that your favorite player is out of form,
yeah,
shut that shit down.
If you're pissed off that your favorite player is out of form, you cannot use him. I mean, you cannot use the online. You can use like just the base rankings. They have a very cool online system called Seasons. Which is, I think, a really innovative way to try and tackle this idea of different player skill levels. So much like the fixtures in the real sport where clubs get promoted by playing very well,
right.
Everybody who plays starts off at a base level, and as you play better and better, you move. It's like StarCraft leagues. You basically move through leagues. And you get to keep your record, and in that way, instead of trying to do this ELO stuff and figure out like, oh, well, Jeff's played this many games, I played. It's very simple. It's like win and loss. How well have you been playing? What league are you in? You keep playing. If you keep winning, then you move up. If you keep losing, you move down.
That's really cool.
It's really cool. Really cool.
Sounds awesome.
It's so well, like FIFA is so very well put together. And you know, we haven't even talked about the game on the field. I think that the first touch stuff is cool. I think the one thing that is maybe a little overlooked is I think that they tweaked the ball physics more even than just the first touch, because the ball really moves around the pitch. And I think it in a realistic manner that lets the first touch thing work. So it's just really evident, you know, how the ball comes off of your player, goes where you think it should. And so it's very easy and natural to react to. I'm kind of geeked for the game.
That's great.
Really having a good time with it.
Here's my dilemma. I have a dilemma for you. The game that I've been playing most this week is Resident Evil 6.
Resident Evil 6.
But it is under embargo.
Yes.
And I'm not allowed to
pick that embargo up and peek under there.
I'm not allowed to talk about. I'm not allowed to review it until Monday, which basically means
it's not out till Tuesday, bro.
It's not. It's out till Tuesday, which basically means by the time I get to talk about it on this show, it'll sort of be irrelevant.
No, it's next game. It's next week's game of the week.
Well, what about this?
Is it?
Yeah,
listeners, just pause the podcast right now.
Wait till next week.
Listen to this segment on Monday.
Hold on. If we can get you to sign.
I would love to like have like a sign.
Everybody listening, just sign a little NDA right now.
No one reads those agree or
disagree. I have so much to say about this. I have so, like, I could spend the next hour talking about Resident Evil 6, and I want to really badly. And I have never wanted more for there to be like the supplemental weekend confirmed, like plug-in pack to.
You're here next week.
Yeah.
And Andrew will probably be on because Andrew's reviewing it for us.
Oh, good.
And.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
You guys can talk about your co-op adventures.
It is a very interesting co-op idea that they ran with, as we talked about.
How much of the game have you played, by the way?
I have played one third of it. It's broken into three
I've heard thirds. It is outrageously long.
It is outrageously long. It is very, very long.
Outrageously long, especially for the sort of game it is.
There's three campaigns. I have played one of them. Each campaign is like feels like a full Resident Evil game. So... yes, there's a lot of game there. There's a lot of game there.
Well, I hope it's good. That would be pretty awesome.
A lot of Resident Evil there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of residency.
A lot of residency.
A lot of residency. So
I'm trying to figure out how I can talk about it.
I can just say things and then you can just sigh appropriately. Jeff Mass and I are pre-ordering right after this. And we're not pre-ordering. Which one?
All right. The one of you that's pre-ordering, raise your hand and I will point to who made the better decision.
Let the record reflect that Jeff is pointing between the middle of both of us.
Don't. It's a really interesting co-op idea that they went with. I mean, this idea that it's looking for co-op partners for you constantly, and there's points where the three different, you know, there's three campaigns, and each of them is starring a pair of characters.
Right.
So you're co-oping inside the campaign, but then the campaigns themselves at certain key moments will co-op with each other. So if I'm playing in, you know... oh, God, all the names of the characters just leapt out of my head.
Chris, Jill, Ida.
Yeah.
I don't know any of them.
Ada.
Right. Jack and Ceres. Leon, Helene. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. If I'm playing a pair of characters and I get to a big moment where I run into another pair of characters, it will actively search for somebody who's
actively,
in
right, they're
that
playing for real.
Game.
Yeah, no, that's a really cool idea.
And we'll hook up. And if it doesn't find that, it will populate it with... AI.
And the amazing
bots.
Thing is you can't tell the difference.
So the embargo's up on what? Monday.
The bummer thing about that is that it basically means you can't pause the game. There's no pausing because
really?
It might be other people. Even if it's not other people, it could be other people. So I hope you didn't want to I hope your phone doesn't ring like it did a bunch of times for me.
There's really no pausing.
No pausing.
That's interesting.
During those sections.
During those sections. How long?
As
how
if
long
you're in a multiplayer section.
So how long do those sections run? That's something I've been really curious about.
Well, it depends on how long it takes you to take down the boss, which can be a while.
So they're boss-centric?
Not always, but most of the time there are these big tentpole moments, yes. Hmm. Yes. And you know, you can set whether people can hop into your game anytime, mm-hmm. and you can set whether you don't want people to hop into your game. And, you know, it's the first Resident Evil without where you can move and shoot. That's a pretty big deal.
Hey, guys, welcome back. If it's not your iPod shuffling, there was just a portion there cut out where Jeff said things he shouldn't have said about Resident Evil 6. So if it seems weird to
you. Yeah, that, I hope you guys don't mind that giant edit there.
So I want to talk about Resident Evil. Hey, guys, welcome.
We'll talk.
Well, the upshot of this is next week we'll be able to talk in depth about Resident Evil 6.
Yeah, it's the game I've been playing most this week, and it's very long.
I wish I was going to be playing it because it would be good to be able to participate, but I'll be an observer because
you're such a fan of the series. I'm surprised.
Andrew's reviewing it for us.
Yeah.
And I don't really.
There's lots of story. I'll tell you that. Lots of story in that.
And, and what's your take? I mean, so far, how's the story striking? Are you into it? Are you not into it? Do you, I mean,
without
are you into the
story,
lore? Are you into the lore at all?
You know, I used to be. I haven't been as much lately. I think the story is interesting. It's interesting how I always find it, you know, I'm a big fan of Pulp Fiction and movies that do fun things with narrative structure. And I like the fact that you're basically seeing three views into the same events. And that's a really cool concept and a really cool thing to go with. And you're seeing really big different sides of that Resident Evil universe.
So it's now, like the Rashomon of Resident Evil games.
Yes. Which I think think they should definitely put that on the box because that'll get the kids excited. As convoluted as it is, and we have a whole new virus that does whole different things to people. And
dude, viruses mutate. This is the way it works.
True.
Viruses change, and they're making new bioweapons.
If there's one thing you're an expert on, Garnet Lee, it's viruses.
Heyo.
I don't even know that.
That's what she said?
I don't even know that.
God, I hope not.
God, all right. I hope not, too.
Let's just, we'll move on, because I can't really talk.
Yeah, I don't want to get that call where it's like, I just got back from the doctors.
Your virus mutated, bro. Oh, yeah. Shit.
This will be my last show. I'll be a zombie next week.
What else have you guys been playing?
Hey, you said Leon and Helena. I played some Dead or Alive 5.
Oh.
Which I like a lot.
Well, you Surprise. Are a fan of the movies.
You know the thing about Dead or Alive, and I actually was thinking about this because Tekken also came out, and people have been liking Tekken quite a bit as well. Tekken cleaned up itself very well, evidently. I haven't got a chance
Tekken
to play
Tag
it.
Tournament 2.
Yeah, evidently it's been pretty successful. I've seen a lot of good buzz. What I think I like about Dead or Alive, as I've been thinking about this since yesterday, is that many fighting games have varying degrees of how much detail they go into with move sets and precision of move sets. And Dead or Alive has good move sets. I think that some people would scoff at the fact that the underlying nature of them, once you understand the way the fighting system works, can be applied across a range of characters more easily than it can in other fighters. So by that, what I'm saying is that the whole rock, paper, scissors approach in Dead or Alive is played up as one of its key fighting system features. And so as long as you are adept at it, it works for button mashers. But it doesn't really work for button mashers. You still have to –
That's back of the box.
It's not right. It's not like – it's not like you can just sit there and tap buttons and wipe people out.
But you can tap buttons
and wipe people out. That's so great.
If you learn that down and punch gives you a certain sort of attack and back and guard gives you a different kind of hold, and you learn how to put those things together, the logic behind how they work together, then you can fight with almost any character, and every character has their unique set of moves that go with them that looks very cool. And then if you learn enough about the characters you like, then you can recognize that, yeah, I know that this does a front lifting kick, but with this character it's a longer range, higher reaching one than it is with this other character. Or I know that, you know,
isn't that every fighting game?
Yeah, but you know what, in other fighting games it really comes down to you have to really memorize very specific unique move sets. And I think that with Dead or Alive there are a few signature moves for each character, but if you know the base repertoire of how to fight with a character in Dead or Alive, and then you know that, oh, you know, Bayman is slow and relies on holds, and Tina is a little faster, but she has some kicks to augment her holds.
Are you basically just saying that the fighters are a little more homogenous?
I'm saying that the system is, yes. Mm. The system is in that the input actions are more consistent across all the characters, but the animations and effects thereof are still varied, and it puts more of the weight of how you fight in the game, in to my mind, into how well you do the Rochambeau game of, I'm kicking, you're blocking, I'm holding, you're picking out of that, and that sort of play back and forth. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Dead or Alive's always, I mean, that's true to its franchise roots.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Button mashers can come in and win some rounds, but someone that is skilled, and now the way they've tweaked reversals some, right? As my understanding, I haven't played the game, but before it used to be very reversal heavy and a button masher could luck out.
Swung the needle back and forth on that many, many times. I think that it feels like they hit a pretty good medium on this one. You still need to
It's more about the timing than the move that you're
So it's timing,
off,
but you also have to match the height. So
which before you didn't. At least the last time I played, three?
No, that was
No, maybe? You had to do high, middle, or low, like counter.
No, there was one that was mid and low, and high was separate. And okay. So you could still catch low catch, but some of them weren't reversible.
Right.
So anyway, now they're back to you have to match the height. The window for reversal is narrow, but not so narrow that you're never going to get it. But not so open that like Dead or Alive 2, where you're just going to sit there and be like, I'm not going to attack because I'm just going to sit here and wait.
Reverse, yeah.
Right, because you can never get an attack in because every attack sequence just gets you beat to hell.
Story?
Oh, it's hilarious. It's fucking hilarious. I love that Dead or Alive has the crazy, ridiculous, awesome 3D fighter story that 3D fighter games are supposed to. It's like,
are you sticking...
It harkens back to the era of just absolute ludicrous, ridiculous stories. You're on a ship with Helena, and she's talking about DoTech, which is, you know, Chris, DOA Tech, mm-hmm. and how they're going to bring it back, and they need to find the Alpha model, and that's the crazy weaponized clone of Kasumi that was against you in...
Oh, right.
It gets totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the fun part of it is that each one of these scenarios and scenes that's happening as they jump around from story to story is really their way of going around getting the gang together. And so you get to the end of the story mode, and now you've figured out how everybody got to the tournament. And so when you're playing in multiplayer, you actually have this silly set of stories for what everyone had been doing and how they got back to the tournament.
I love that.
Cool.
I love that fighters are doing that. I love the Mortal Kombat story.
Yeah.
Persona Fighter was very story heavy. But I love that fighting games are making a play back into that single player story campaign where you have to play with each character a little bit. You understand everybody. Even if you don't want to main somebody, you know, oh, that's kind of how this person moves now because you've played them, and you can just figure out what you want to do after that point.
I am always going to main Helena and secondary...
I'm gonna main the shit out of Helena.
And secondary Ayane. But it's fun to, like you said, exactly, it is fun to get Jack and be like, I'm just going to go crazy, kickbox, like, hi-ya! Like, I have just fun with him, even though, like, I'm not going to take the time to really learn how to put him to use the right way because he's not my character. But you're right. Like, it's...
Somebody needs to make a fighting game with the Expendables license so that you have Stallone versus freaking, you know, like, all the characters, you know, Schwarzenegger and all those guys. Dolph Lundgren. That'd be awesome! Nobody cares. Nobody else but me cares about that.
I think a bunch of old washed up action heroes.
Chuck Norris, amazing.
Yeah. I'm gonna stick with Dead or Alive.
Did anybody see Expendables 2 but me?
No.
It's actually.
Did anybody see Dread 3D but me?
No, I missed that.
Fantastic.
So did you get any of that out of Marvel Capcom Origins?
Origins. I mean, it's such. If you don't know, it's Marvel Superheroes and Marvel vs. Capcom 1. And they're great ports of those games, but those games aren't balanced. They never were. There's not a great story mode. There are cool unlockables that they added to these versions that kind of entice you to come back and keep playing. But
I love the sprites, too. They look so good.
It ages so well. The animation is there. Sprite drawing looks beautiful, whereas going back and playing, you know, Toshinden or Virtua Fighter 1.
The old school 3D stuff
doesn't hold up.
Well,
and these games still play well. The controls are still there. They're still fun. But in the online code for me, has been great. I mean, Capcom has figured that 2D online code out, or whoever, Backbone, or whoever did this one, these ports. The code is there. It's great. But you're going to see a lot of Spider-Man, was it Red Venom? Like, the mains are the mains. But if you're going in to have fun and messing around, it's great. If you are a fighting game fan, I think maybe save your money and get Dead or Alive 5 if you like 3D fighters. Or it's hard to recommend it as a fighter and not as a nostalgia, like, hey, this is $10 for
fan service,
two games, right? Because the genre has evolved. Even the crazy mashup genre has evolved past that and to make more competent fighters that are more intricate. But it's fun to look back and see where this crazy shit came from. I mean, Marvel versus Capcom.
It's like seeing the origins of it.
Hey! It's cool, though. I mean, they did a good... It's a good port of those games, but just don't go in, if you love Marvel versus Capcom 3, thinking, this is going to be great. You might not like it.
Yeah.
So don't go in with that.
It's for fans of the old stand-up arcade games.
Double Dragon Neon, on the other hand, is fantastic.
Yeah,
really? I had read the opposite.
So did I, and I was put off for playing it for the longest time. I got it free as a PlayStation Plus member. I don't know if it's just my age range where I grew up playing these brawlers, but if you liked... To me, Double Dragon Neon is definitely better than going back and playing X-Men Arcade again, or like revisiting Turtles or any of these games that you grew up thinking you liked because they were great then. This game has a classic. It's cheap. I mean, it's a brawler where you die a lot or whatever, but it adds complexity on top of the basic, you know, punch, kick, grab kind of thing where you can duck to dodge and it builds up your glamour, which then you get stronger. And there's complexity to the fighting that's awesome. And you can upgrade your special move. You can upgrade your stance, like go towards more of an attacker, more of blocking, somewhere in the middle. And so it encourages you, if you do die during a level and you have to replay it, you keep those upgrades. They're mixtapes, which, by the way, the soundtrack is free and fantastic. It's so good. It's like retro 80s kind of cheesy stuff.
I need some embellishment on glamour.
I think it's called glamour. Your glam. It's just you dodge right and it, like, your character lights up and it's cool. I think that's what they call it. And I could be wrong. Oh. But if you like brawlers at all, especially if you're 30-ish.
Especially if they're glamorous.
Well, it does that stuff on purpose, though. Like, right. If you play co-op, you can high five. And there's fun references at the end of the game.
To each other's hair.
The boss is like, oh, no, you beat me. Like, it's self-referential in a funny way. I think it handles it well. Like, you start out on the streets, and like all these games end up on a spaceship. He's like, why am I on a spaceship? Better hold my breath. And then you play like a whole level with him holding his breath because you're in the vacuum of space.
Well, I won't lie. I was a big Double Dragon player fan back in the day.
Oh, yeah,
so,
man.
So this game is
bad dudes.
This game
bad
isn't dudes. The necessarily an updating of classic Double Dragon as much as it is an update and fan service of all of those brawlers. Yeah. It's not the purest Double Dragon experience redone, but there's cool fan service in it. When you're in the level map, it's your 8-bit sprite moving around that, like, you know and love and you saw.
Do you have fun playing these games by yourself?
Yes.
I mean, you know what I mean is that I didn't mean to say, I'm sorry, Christian. I meant, do you have fun soloing these games?
The most condescending question of all time.
Beat some dudes up. Get your hair, dude.
Because, hey, shut the fuck up playing Borderlands 2 by yourself, indie Jeff Mattis. You're going to throw some darts
guys,
I'm at it.
Let's have a lonely off. Who's the loneliest?
Yeah. Hey, I sat in my apartment by myself all day yesterday in my PJs and playing FIFA. Games. So. Anyway.
It's good. No, I do.
You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not huge about brawlers. And I was thinking, like while you were talking about this, I was thinking about, like, what was the last brawler that I played that I was really into? And it was Dynamite Deca on Dreamcast, which was...
Wow. No Castle Crashers?
Yeah, come on, bro. Excellent. Come on, bro.
I guess that counts, doesn't
totally
it?
Totally counts.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
I think if you awesome. Liked Castle Crashers... And I think this is $10 if you're not a PS Plus subscriber.
Plus.
It's definitely try it. I sat down like, well, I'll play this for a little bit. I beat the game. I played through it on normal by myself, and it's fun. Like the grind.
And then you cried yourself to sleep.
And then I was like, oh,
I just remember like how much fun friends. Those are when you have someone else to play with.
Because oh, sure.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
And does it have like lots of like crazy weapons and stuff? Because that was the part that was always most fun in those games, is like finding the ridiculous shit to pick up and beat someone over the head with for like three
and
or four
And then for
hits.
Some reason, they're done with the bat.
It breaks.
The bat doesn't break.
And this it does.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, it goes like, psh, like you hit it and it's like just splinters everywhere. And it's awesome.
Dude, the old aluminum bat, they would pick it. You would hit a guy twice and they'd be like, eh, I'm going to toss this aside.
That was like, effective. I get rid of it.
Yeah. This is heavy.
And you should play it. Sit down and just play it for a half hour, see what you think. It's really fun. It's beautiful. The graphics are really well done. It's way forward. The guy who did the soundtrack is Jake Kaufman. If you go to his website, it's Pay What You Want. How big of an asshole am I? I'm like, it's free.
It's pay what you want, bro.
But clearly, which happens to know what you want.
Happens to be nothing in this case.
No, I think I paid like $2, to be honest.
Big spender.
I'm not.
I paid $2.
That makes you seem way nicer.
But people, I think IGN really panned the game in their review, saying it's just repetitive, brawlers are a dead genre. And while no one wants to play a brawler, it's not, you know, Gears of War or Halo 4. It's not that type of game. It's really well built, and there is complexity to the fighting. You can dodge and link attacks for a really long time and play strategically and just use your special attack and not even use standard punches and kicks. There's complexity to it that adds a fun layer to what is, at the end of the day, a brawler.
I think you made a good point by bringing up Castle Crashers, because if any game proved that brawlers are not dead, it is that game. That game is fantastic and fun, and I feel like there's
now
something
on Steam
even more
or very soon on Steam.
Well, I mean,
granted, Scott Pilgrim is great. Also,
it was a single player, but I mean, Bastion was more or less a brawler.
I don't know. It's hard to. I don't know if I'd go that far.
I mean, yeah, you're not technically using your fists, but it's that same sort of like run around and hit everything with your shit. I mean, yeah, it's more, way more intricate, way better than any of the brawl, the standard brawl. I don't know. Maybe bad analogy then.
All right. We'll take a little break to contemplate that. When we come back on the other side, we will wrap this up, and then of course we'll do the real tailgate now.
Oh,
now
boy.
That Jeff's here,
so excited!
Yeah,
that's really the only reason I came back.
Are you more fired up than your Niners were last weekend?
Oh, Mr. 0-6 is going to start throwing punches. Okay, let's have that happen. I can't wait for the tailgate.
We'll be right back. Show we were talking about Torchlight 2.
Indeed.
We had the $20 game thing. So let's talk about some game prices. I have a couple of things here, starting with the reveal of Sony's Day One Digital plan.
How cool is this?
So, yeah. 8 top tier releases this fall are going to be available digitally on launch day from the PlayStation Store. Now, here's where it sort of splits. 4 of them are going to be offered at a discount to PlayStation Plus members who pre-order. So if you pre-order these games, instead of $60, they'll be $54. And those would be NBA 2K13, Dishonored, Need for Speed Most Wanted. Oh, I'm sorry, this one's actually $36 instead of $40 because it's an inexpensive game, or less expensive. That's Doom 3 BFG Edition. The other 4 games that are going to be available on launch day digitally through PlayStation Network are Resident Evil 6, Medal of Honor Warfighter, Assassin's Creed 3, and 007 Legends. Now, 007 Legends will also be 10% off during the first week for members. So it will be that same $53.99, but for the first week, but you don't have to pre-order it. Do you understand?
Oh,
yes.
Really, 007?
So, yeah. So there's kind of a weird thing going on here. I mean, I want to be excited for them because it's another, you know, move forward towards having real digital distribution.
Yeah.
At the same time, $60 for the same thing that you would get a box and disc and not have on your hard drive, which increasingly
space. I need hard drive space.
Right.
Aye.
Why does it need to be $60? I mean, I realize they're still beholden.
They
to
are giving you a discount
if you're PlayStation Plus.
Yeah. It's cool.
And only on 4 of the games. And it's 10%. I mean, not to scoff at 10%.
Yeah.
But
it's better than a lot of the used discount that you get.
I agree.
Does anyone know, like, is this on a publisher, and this is anyone listener? I'm curious. I mean, is this on a publisher level? Because, like, Nintendo did the same thing with New Super Mario Brothers.
They had to
2.
Have reached agreements with the publishers to do this. So you've got EA involved, clearly, because they've got Medal of Honor and Need for Speed in the mix. You've got Bethesda in here with Doom 3 and Dishonored. You've got 2K in here with NBA 2K. You've got Ubi with Assassin's Creed 3, Capcom with Resident Evil 6, and Activision with 007 Legends.
I just mean, who's the gatekeeper on the price? Is it Sony? Is it the publisher? Because even when I feel like the console, Sony does it with their own games, they're not super aggressive with the pricing. Like, someone is hesitant to pull that trigger.
It's got to be a combination of the two, I would think. Because both of them still are trying to keep their relationships good with brick-and-mortar retailers and or with box copy retailers. Because keep in mind now, Amazon's dog in the fight here is still selling you a box with a disc in it. It's going to be delivered by UPS.
Yeah, but they're not going to care either way. They win no matter what.
Amazon does. Why do they win no matter what?
If the world changes to digital distribution, they're set for
not on consoles.
That's
how do they distribute you a game on console?
That's a very good point. Code. I mean, they've done it some. You could buy PSN games and various things the same way GameStop does.
It's a salient point though. And my question is, and maybe you know the answer to this: if I pre-order it, get the discount, do I get to pre-download it?
So actually,
and
they've
let
already
it sit they, there until it unlocks.
The answer to that question right now is there will be more details to come. However, they are working out the technical sides so that you would be able to get the game at 12:01 a.m.
That's
on launch day.
Get the game meaning begin your download at 12:01.
They did not specify in
yeah, because that's a big difference.
Well, and it's a big download.
And it's a big difference if umpteen bazillion yeah. people are trying to.
Well,
queue that
way,
download at the same time.
Six too. Gigs or 10 gigs or 20 gigs is going to take, even if you're the only one,
yeah.
it's going to take a while.
So I think it's better on Blu-ray, bro. That's
for
all
me,
that extra space.
For me, I'm enthusiastic that we're moving forward, and I'm excited that it's a step in the right direction. And I still hasn't changed my mind about the pricing point being out of line. And we still have to figure out how to handle the bandwidth and storage issues. Like, yeah. I have a 60 gig start, original
Me
PlayStation
too.
3.
Me too.
In order
I
to
can't
make,
do that.
To make really good use of this, I'd have to go out and buy a new hard drive,
yep.
which is not terribly expensive, but it's another expense.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole delivery mechanism. So, I think we're actually going to hold the conversation on Tokyo Jungle till next week. Are you going to play it at all? You should play Tokyo Jungle.
I will like it when I...
It's kind of ridiculous and awesome.
Yeah, I think it's something I would like.
I think you'd like it too.
It's GTA with tigers, right?
Talk about nostalgia. Tokyo Jungle harkens back to that heyday of Sega and Dreamcast where they were making ridiculous games that were just fucking fun. And yeah. they were like so ridiculous but still so fun. Like this game has that so well. Anyway... But here's my point is that I went to get that. I bought it last night. It's like $12 for PlayStation Plus. It's 2.5 gig, mm-hmm. which means even on and then the thing is like it's 2.5 gig, which actually should have come through faster than it did because I've got 30 down, 5 up. But a lot of the services, because of the amount of media they're trying to serve, have to rate limit the amount of bandwidth they can even give you to buy your product off of. Mm-hmm. So even if you've got some crazy Fios connection, you might not be able to get the game in the 20 minutes it theoretically ought to come to you because yeah. they can't physically serve it to you that right. fast. Mm-hmm. This happens on Steam sometimes too. I mean,
I see a wildly different,
like on some games on Steam, I'm getting like made awesome throughput. Then other ones I'll be like where the
hell
is my game?
I'm convinced that's the reason that they pushed and got on the preloading
yeah.
Things so fast because they...
Because the moment
smart.
The load yeah. that you would get moment to moment would be so high for these files that they're like, how many instances in the cloud of a file would you have to be able to efficiently right. serve it to so many people wanting it at one time? So I don't know.
I think it's a great option. I mean,
I think it's a great option. It's a fantastic way to put it. I think it's a great option. I don't know where it leads from here. I don't know how quickly it means that we'll really have.
Well, have you guys downloaded any full retail releases from, say, Xbox Live or
like Games
PSN
on Demand?
Yeah, because I haven't. And
sorry, I had something stuck.
I haven't, and it's mainly because there are some times where I'll go be like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool, and it's usually the older games that they're now selling for like, $20 or whatever.
Right.
But in almost all cases, I look at it and I go, you know what? If I just get off my ass and go to the store, I can get it for cheaper right now.
That's the thing I think
on
with
PC all the time though.
Well, those are cheaper though.
Not necessarily.
I feel like for me, games are never an impulse buy where I'm like, oh, Halo Anniversary is on Games on Demand now. Right, I have been dying to play that. I must play it right now. For whatever reason, they don't hit that compulsion, like, must buy now.
You don't get that when there's a Steam sale?
But see, that's different. That's pricing. So then
that's
I'm like,
an impulse buy based on...
But it shifts it to where I feel like the Games on Demand and PlayStation haven't hit that price yet, where it's like, yeah, now it's
totally
worth it for me
yeah.
to do it now because it's $7 or whatever it is,
right.
and it justifies it. But normally, like, hey, this full-price game just came out, or
right.
this old game is now $30. Oh, I didn't play it. I clearly haven't been in a rush to play it because it's been out for a year, and I can wait until I go to Target next time.
Honestly... I mean, and this is like total insider baseball or whatever, but the thing that I think is coolest about those things on console is, and most developers don't do it, but to be able to deliver review code a little bit more efficiently and faster.
If they want to, if they do it.
Yeah, if they want to. But I mean, that's if it all boils down to, like,
that's been around
about
for a while. Microsoft price, actually delivered Crackdown 2.
Yeah, else have they ever done that?
Never.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's interestingly enough, it's totally secure.
Right. And it worked great for Crackdown, but then why did they not ever follow up on that?
It beats me.
Yeah.
Only the shadow knows. So here's a comparison another way to approach your game consumption and finances. Eric the Crow, in last week's show thread, wrote a very interesting post, and this is longer than most posts that I read, but stick with me because I've edited it down, but I think that you'll get the gist of it. It says, after last gen, I felt the hype surrounding new games was getting too much, and I decided that this gen I'd only buy a game at 20, maybe 30 bucks, and if there's story DLC, I'll only buy a game of the year or a complete version. In 2008, I bought an Xbox 360 Elite, an Oblivion Game of the Year, and started on my little test. I'm not in the thick of the release day conversation, and honestly, I don't mind. Usually immediate conversation is very shallow and full of memes and hyped by the fact that you just spent 60 bucks plus tax on this game. It's much easier to have an intellectual discussion on truly memorable games from the SNES era to something recently passed like Fallout 3 or BioShock now than the week they came out. And he goes on to say, the only really benefit that you can think of is having that conversation during the first week. And, of course, excluding multiplayer games, I honestly don't find them very fun. Once I realized I was paying $40 premium to understand the latest memes and not feel left out of the internet forums, the decision became easy. And it's a ridiculous fear if you think about it.
You know, I used to wait for games until I took an arrow to the knee.
Well done.
Yeah.
In Borderlands.
And yeah.
In Borderlands.
By the way, if you're walking around town.
Yeah, little minor spoiler.
Anyway.
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
Yes, I'm playing Mad World right now, which I got for $5 on Wii, and it's old and whatever, and I'd agree. There's fantastic experiences. You can get them cheaper, and you can still have fun, and you can have great discussions with things. But other games like Dark Souls or Borderlands 2, I think adds to the game to be playing it when a bunch of people are playing it. Like Borderlands, I'm playing Borderlands 1 right now, which I've played 2 some, and then 1 is free for PS Plus members. Like, I never play this. I'd love to play it now. I can't get a game with people in the way that you can. You jump on, I can play with randoms, or my friends list is full of people playing it, and there's something cool about that experience. Dark Souls Demon Souls was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was something awesome about playing that with people as you're on GAF or on the message board. Like, holy crap, I have no clue what's... Versus,
of course, you're making the multiplayer argument, which he said he doesn't like multiplayer games.
Well, no, but Demon's Souls isn't multiplayer in the way Fez, single player game, was great to play when everybody was playing it. I thought it was super fun. Like, did you see the minor spoiler QR code? But it's like that experience as a collective, I think there's something to that. And there's something to waiting too, but you don't get that in the moment. We're all figuring this out. Did you watch Lost last week? Holy shit, my mind is blown. Versus, hey, season 1 of Breaking Bad is cool.
Yeah, it's fun to be in the zeitgeist sometimes. Yeah. It really is.
And there's probably, like, ideally a happy medium you could achieve. Like, these are the three games that I'm really, really, really excited about. And, you know, to what you guys are saying, like, when a game like Skyrim or Dishonored, you know, comes out and you're basically, you know, when I talk with your friends about, oh, dude, I did this thing the other night where you probably didn't do it, but I, you know... We've gone through the same area and played it two different ways.
Heavy Rain or kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Anything with divergent, like, either gameplay or story, you know, anything that empowers the player to be creative. You know, I think that it's fun to talk about that stuff.
How long are you willing to wait for the payoff if you're anticipating something? That's what it really is, right? Like, how long are you willing to wait to satisfy your, I want to see that. Oh, I want to play that. I mean, I'm thinking about movies, right? And... there was no way that I was going to wait on Avengers. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to go, like, yeah, sure, I could have waited and then, you know, caught it on demand or on Blu-ray or even just put it in my Netflix and waited for it.
I think that's a great analogy. That's probably the exact same way that, you know, you should look at it for almost all entertainment, you know, anything that's...
And especially the sort of games he's talking about. Like it went right to Oblivion. Like, that game... it's going to be as fun a year from now as it was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it depends on what sort of games you're talking about and where your appeal lies. It's interesting. I mean, it is an interesting idea. I mean, of course, I mean, I think it applies universally, right? But then the other hand thing is, like, zeitgeist can work the other direction, too. Like, I still haven't seen Prometheus.
Me either.
I was so super, exactly, and that's why, because I was super psyched to see it, right? And then a couple of folks saw it ahead of time, and I saw the TRS review, and I was like...
I believe it is now on demand, though.
It is now on demand.
And I'm probably, yeah, that's probably something I'll watch this weekend, actually.
So it's like, I'm not upset that I didn't spend, you know, $30 for two tickets to go to the theater to see it, and I probably won't even do on demand. I'll probably just wait till I can get it on, like, into my queue or something.
I'll do it for $5 on demand.
If it's $5 on demand, I do it.
Yeah, that's if you do the Amazon Prime stuff, all the HD movie rentals are $5.
So I can do it that way. Anyway, be that as it may, the same thing of if you're willing to wait, the price goes down, applies to everything. So I think that it's interesting that someone did this as an experiment. I don't know how well it applies to everybody.
I think it's smart, and I'm glad he's enjoying it, but I don't think you should necessarily dismiss people being up to date as wrong either.
No.
Is all I'm saying.
But there's certainly an argument in a hobby where the cost of playing is pretty high.
Get another job. Got to buy that PS3. Just get two jobs. However many jobs it takes, get them. Get those jobs.
Get jobs. It's so easy to get jobs right now.
Go get jobs.
Right.
Just find a job.
So get it. Find it and then get it.
The key to this game for the Steelers is they got to get a touchdown to get more points than the other team.
How to Make It in America by Christian Spicer.
Just get it. Find a place that gives you money and then take the money. Just get it.
God, you sound like, what's his name? King of the Hill.
Box him and then ship it.
Hank Hill. Was that his name?
Hank.
First you box it, then you ship it.
That boy, all right. God damn it.
So, that was scary.
That's my Hank Hill impersonation.
Oh my lord! All right, let's keep going.
Black boy and right
at the at the other end of the spectrum is the growing trend towards season passes, which has driven the price for the complete game experience ever higher. And you know, we hit a new mark this week with Forza Horizon announcing that its season pass is going to be $50.
Get a job.
$50.
Yowza!
So the
Forza
the. And here's the thing is like sight unseen, they're essentially asking you to not just buy a $60 game, but buy a $60 game and also give us another $50, basically the price of a second game, for what we're going to give you on top of that in the next year.
What are you going to give me? What are you going to give me?
But they tell you the value, right?
You're going to tell me exactly what you're going to give
me. Actually, this time they didn't tell you the complete value. They said that they estimate that it would be about a 17% savings. I love their particulars. It's like, it's going to be 17% savings.
Ooh,
wow. Now, one of the things they're including this time, and this is, so Christian, you brought up the point of Borderlands, because Borderlands did a season pass. Borderlands 2 did a season pass, but its season pass was specifically for the four downloadable episodic content pieces that are coming post-launch and not for extra gear or other classes.
Right. Those are not in season. Those are not seasonal.
Well.
Not seasonal.
I think that the season pass name is a little bit off.
DLC bundles or something.
That would be much better, right? Because that's what it is. It's like we're saying, hey, if you're going to commit to buying all four of these, we'll give you four of them for the price of three, which is fine. The Forza Horizon move is to make it a true season pass where everything that comes out over the year is included in the pass. So it starts with they have an expansion.
DLC delayed till next year.
And then that could happen too.
Wait.
They have an expansion pack planned for December. So there's a full-on expansion for the game. You get six car add-ons as well. So they do monthly add-ons. And then you get as a special bonus for our season pass holders. You get five special cars.
Ooh, that sounds special. Like the Wienermobile.
Or the short bus.
Or the rule of three. it's great for people that are... I think the option is great. I think that it's for people that are big fans of a franchise that are...
Fanses.
willing to blindly say, we trust you. Here's my money. I want this discount. You have done me no wrong so far.
And Horizon is a new branch in the franchise.
I dare you to do me wrong right now. You have not done me wrong yet. Here's my money. Do me wrong.
Find it and get it.
And it's bold because this isn't even Turn 10 developing it. Like, this is a new branch from a new developer. It's open world. It's a totally different sort of game. Like, I don't know. I'm not comfortable with $110 being the price tag. Like, right off the bat, someone saying, if you really want the full experience of our game, it's going to be $110. I'm not completely comfortable.
Would
with
you feel more comfortable if it was $60 out of the gate and then $12 a month?
I don't know.
Have you bought any season pass?
Have you been defeated?
Yeah, he
you've
just,
been
like,
defeated.
He just World of Warcraft me over the head.
Well, no, but I mean, just it's all relative. Like, you know,
that's the show. We're
and I'm not going to pay $50. I don't think for that. But that's just because I'm not a the old Uber racing fan that
I think they're called racists. Aren't they? No? Is that different? No, is that something different?
No, that's the Republican Party. No.
Oh! Holy shit! Garnet Lee.
Megaton.
Can we send your letters to Garnet Lee, care of piss you off at...
Guys, we are at a table with multicolor iPhone 5s. We can all agree that there is no right color for an Apple product. Now,
ebony,
if it's a Samsung product, don't even.
Ivory.
Has anyone bought?
By the way, that was a joke for comedic intent. I realize that now half of you are very angry, and I apologize. I apologize. For
hey,
that.
Leave the jokes for the comedians to say and have people hate.
I am not a political commentator. I apologize.
47% of the people listening to the show. Fuck those people.
Dude, however, Jeff apparently is. All right. So anyway, back on track. $100. Like, look, no matter how you slice it, saying right out of the gate, give me another $50 after you just spent $60 is a pretty tall order. But I think it's a little
too
high.
Is it worse to say, here's $60. Here's our first pack. It costs $10. Here's our second pack. It costs $10. And so that it's a surprise coming down the line.
I don't know what, honestly, I don't know. I like
17%.
I mean, you can still do it that way. They still are offering it down the line.
Yeah.
So I mean,
you're not forced.
Can I say something that might get misinterpreted? Yes. But
again,
at least he warned us this time.
Do we really need games to have this much support after launch? Do we really need them to just keep on cranking out this much content afterwards?
No.
Why do you say no?
Because I think about the games that I actually buy the content for post launch, and for example, the Assassin's Creed series, the extra missions that they do, Mass Effect, the extra missions that they do, and what I typically do is I play through the game when it first comes out, and then I wait like whatever until all that DLC comes out, and then I replay the game with all like the quote unquote complete experience. Six or eight months later.
Like our guy who wrote in.
Yeah. But I mean, the difference is I'm not waiting.
Eric the Crow.
Yeah. Eric the Crow.
Yeah. I'm not waiting, to play the retail experience, 6 months. I'm playing that at the beginning and playing it again, which I guess is probably pretty inefficient. But I don't know. As somebody who really likes those particular series, it's frustrating to me because I'm like, I mean, I wouldn't mind taking another run at Mass Effect 3, but I know more DLC's coming, so I'm not going to touch it, And maybe I won't touch it when I, maybe I won't get that last piece of DLC. But that's what I've been doing. It's just kind of.
I like playing a game and finishing it and feeling like I got what I wanted out of it. Game like Horizon, I might even go back to that several times. I mean, I played Test Drive Unlimited 2 quite a bit and went back to it quite a bit. But I never bought the add-on stuff for it because I didn't feel like I was missing anything. I'm not saying don't support it. I'm saying, though, that it becomes this huge enterprise and it makes a singular game chew up a tremendous amount of both my gaming pocketbook and my gaming time clock.
But doesn't that, I mean, I think we are in a unique position where we're trying to play everything and most people aren't like us.
Even if we're not trying to play everything, dude, there's still like, there's so many games I want to play.
I get that. But I think that there are plenty of fans of Forza that want that game, or even like Matt. I mean, there's certain people who play, or Call of Duty for that matter, or Halo. Well, they'll play that one game and they'll just deep dive into that one experience over a long, long period of time. I'm not that guy, and I think by virtue of our jobs, we sort of can't be that guy, but I think there's a lot of people like that.
That's where I feel like it's not an issue right now. It's like you're saying, Garnet, there are so many great games to play. It's not as if we're missing out because teams are pouring too much resource into one thing or franchise. And at the flip side, if people are enjoying it,
that's why I said it's going to be weird. It's just it chews up a tremendous amount of resource.
Well, I think these things will hit an economic cliff or wall where right now there's money in it and people are chasing that. It's like the next form of pre-ordering a game or getting that money. But at some point, some games will quit having this because it's not working out. But right now it's like this new thing, and we got this new revenue stream, and you can tell investors that we have this, and we're expecting this, and we're expecting this. But it won't work for everything, and I think you'll see the industry contract back to...
All right. We got to do finishing moves because we still have tailgate to do as well. Let's do the finishing moves, clean this thing up, and then get on to the braggadocia of tailgate.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Jeff Mattis, you may kick her off.
Okay, a couple quick things. First, there are a couple of pretty interesting Shaq news pieces that went up recently. One is about the Blops 2 Zombies mode, which is like this open world thing. And the other is John Kiefer, managing editor, just started his Pandaria diary. So if you're into Pandaria, World of Warcraft, those are worth checking out. The other thing...
Slash Orange Chicken.
Yes. Yes. And the other thing is I checked out Bad Piggies, the Rovio sequel to Angry Birds, and I think it's a good game. It is probably not something that a lot of the folks who really enjoyed Angry Birds are going to get really into, because the level of intricacy is a lot higher than just throwing shit at other shit. You know, it's sort of incredible machine-y a little bit. You know, one of those things where Banjo-Kazooie, where you had to build your own vehicles. It's got that sort of element to it. So, you know, unless you like starting each little bite-sized level with a logic puzzle and then a lot of trial and error, it may not click with you. I, on the other hand, am very much enjoying it. I think it's just – my point is, I guess it's a little bit complicated for your average casual.
Angry Birds player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go.
One good Jeff deserves another.
Happy to be back. Folks, I do want to mention real quick again, if you can come see my play, I would love to see you there. It's only two more weekends, and you can get all the details at jeffcanada.com. My real finishing move, however, is another game that I've been playing this week. I love Magic the Gathering, and the new expansion is out for Duels of the Planeswalkers 2013. It adds new decks. It adds lots of new fun and cards. And my God, that game is so addictive and fun. And it's so perfect on the iPad. I love it. I stay up late playing it, and I highly recommend it.
Christian Spicer.
Quickly, Apple ads can be made fun of, too. They're genius ads. I could go on the same angry rant I went on for the Samsung ad, where like geniuses
would pop up. But you won't because you love Apple.
No, I would if this wasn't a finishing move. Those were horrible fucking ads. Finishing move, try something new and unexpected this weekend or this week while you're – just do something that you don't think you would normally do. If you're at a restaurant you always go to, order something you wouldn't normally order.
Tell me what to do.
And that's what I would recommend doing. That's how I discovered Double Dragon Neon. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm going to play this. And I loved it. And I think you can get a lot out of life if you just – you know, choose something outside your norm from time to time. Like, you know, maybe tell me you like me.
Try it.
No,
but
seriously,
like
just try something new. Whatever it is, as big or as small as it is, try something new. And I think oftentimes unexpected results can be fun.
Like Tokyo Jungle, where you can play as animals running through the streets of Tokyo after humankind has disappeared and try to survive. So that That's includes cool. hiding in tall grass and pouncing on creatures that are smaller than you if you're a carnivore, or hiding for ones that are bigger than you, or if you're a lovely deer, finding plants to forage on and running away when the hyenas come after you. And I'm just going to leave it at that because I've just barely started. We'll talk about it next week. It's ridiculous fun and very silly, and it's video game. It's awesome. It's video game. Get it for your PS3.
I'm intrigued.
You will like. All right, everybody. That is it for this fantastic weekend confirmed, where we welcomed Jeff Cannata back, which was awesome. Don't forget to check out his play. Check him out on Totally Rad Show
big,
as well.
Big week. We have the developers of XCOM Enemy Unknown in studio on the show this week.
Sweet. Ask them who the enemy is.
They don't know.
Oh.
It's unknown. And we also have a review of Resident Evil 6. So if you want to find out what I think before you hear me next week.
If you can't already.
It will be in that episode.
And Mr. Christian Spicer at Spicer, what kind of comedy routine stuff you got going on?
I'm going to say the word Republican after a few key moments. ChristianSpicer.com has everything. My show continues at the Nerd Melt Showroom, Nerdist Showroom in Meltdown Comics. Improv or stand-up. Our next one is October.
So good.
Thank you.
So I think you'd tell me that was kind of ill-advised.
October 9th. No, are you kidding? Do you listen to what I say? Don't
we try not to?
Exactly. No, actually, there
what?
We go. Exactly.
What?
Exactly. Huh? You can swing by, check it out, and yeah, that's it.
Indie Jeff Mattis, of course, we know where to get you.
Yeah, at Jeff Mattis.
IndieCade's coming up.
It is, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. I will be there. Actually, that's a good point. I'll be there Friday, next Friday.
Next Friday.
And so if you are an indie dev who is going to be at the show or just want to say hi, give me a shout. I'll be there.
Big thanks, of course, to the Atlanta group here in beautiful Santa Monica. We had the boss in the booth today. Thank you, John. You did an awesome job. We appreciate your smiling visage looking at us through the window. And that's it. If you stick around, we will be back in just a moment with the tailgate for a little ketchup on the Weekend Confirmed Fantasy crew and
the
pick 'em.
Ketchup on stuff.
A little ketchup on it. All right. That's though. That is your Weekend Confirmed. Until next week, we are Ghost.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink, drink away. I need a drink, Alizé. I need a drink, Alizé. I need a drink, champagne. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help. I need a drink, absolute. I need a drink, it's not. I need a drink, NC. I need a drink, in the time. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle. Cause me and my crew won't end no vote.
All right, and right into it with a little fantasy football update where I'm just going to pop the collar just a little bit because I am now tops in division on both East and West side.
Well done, sir.
3-0. In the West, I picked up another win on the backs of Ray Rice and A.J. Green. I beat Chicago Master Blasters 111-91. You didn't fare so well last week in either league. No.
Cam Newton's a...
You went down to so first of all, you got to set your lineup.
Yeah, I know.
And you went down to in the West, you lost to NC Grunt's Giants defense and the power kicking of Rod Baronis. That's what beat you.
Rod Baronis.
So in the West, congratulations to the high cholesterols who take over the first position in Division One, and my Ghosts sitting at the top of Division Two. In the East, a ridiculously close game. My damn team, which is the name of it, eked out the win over Anna Magi 114.55 to 113.55.
Wow.
A single point. Thank you, Jamal Charles, for going batshit insane and just like amazing fantasy weekend. I'm sure that Anna Magi's owner was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You lost to the Goodyear Daleks 75-80. Cam Newton and Trent Richards. Yeah.
Cam Newton, come on.
So the Goodyear Daleks stay on top, and my damn team takes over there. So the Weekend Confirmed Fantasy League soldiering forward now. Looking good.
And in pick'ems, Garnett gets his first win.
I got my first win. Yeah, finally.
His first 1-8 sitting there at the bottom of the barrel.
Gloat it up.
Who's at the top? Well, let me see. I gotta read a lot of names above Garnett's names. Well, look at that. Two N's, one T right at the top there. 5-4.
I'd like
not
to welcome your 49ers to the 2-1 club.
That was a strange game, and I had to lose to freaking Andrew's Vikings.
She's gonna tell you about that sometime.
She's gonna tell me about that. She's already been tweeting me about it. Not a strong game, but you know what? I'm glad we got our loss out of the way. We can move on. 15-1.
I don't know what a loss feels like yet for my team. So,
yeah.
Was that a baseball sign you were just making there?
No, it's my Texans. Come on, I'm a Houston sports fan. We got to revel while we can.
All right. So picking up last week, though, Jeff, you did not fare that well. You were 1-2 as well as Dave Del Rio was 1-2 with me, and I was 1-2. Then we had the booth. Micah picked last week. He was 2-1. And who was our guest pick last week?
That might have been James.
It was probably
James. I'm not even on here.
Oh, no. James is at the bottom.
James is doing catch up.
Oh, okay.
James is at 2-2 because he's doing extra picks.
Right.
Which puts him at 2-2 for the year. And Andrea went 2-2 last weekend as well. So this week, James is picking two extra games because we've got him on the catch up because he wants to do the whole season. Yeah. Andrea's picking one extra game. Here are the games we're picking, folks. We're starting off with, it's a rivalry weekend, by the way, for the primary picks. I'm all for like teams that hate each other.
Like it.
So we've got San Diego at Kansas City, and it's a freaking straight up pick 'em.
I'm taking San Diego.
You're taking the Chiefs. So
no, no, I'm taking the Chargers.
You're taking the Chargers.
I like the way it
are you sure?
Point.
Just wanna. Which one are you taking?
Taking San Diego. So the Chiefs then, huh? No, I'm taking the Chargers.
So you're with the Chargers. Yeah. You give us any, you know, insight here.
I think the Chargers, as they do every year, are good at the beginning of the. Well, maybe this they're flip and flopping it, but I think they're going to beat the Chiefs. They're basically getting points at.
You're not sold on Ryan Matthews' comeback. You know,
no.
Okay. All right. Jeff Mattis, are you picking with us this weekend?
Sure. I will also choose San Diego.
All right.
For no other reason than. Kansas City has a racist mascot.
Okay, then. Christian Spicer, do you want in on this madness?
I guess you don't care about electric Americans.
I'll pick the Chiefs. I'm from San Diego, and I love the Chargers, but they so often play down to the level of their opponent. And this year, so far, they haven't. But they looked awful when they played a good team last week, and I don't think they'll look much better.
And into the booth. Are you picking, John? Do you like that stuff? All right, John's going to go with, he's thinking, he's taking San Diego. Oh, he's got to hold on to those. We're going to get those in just a
second. We'll get to those in a second.
All right, so he's going to San Diego. And then James's pick is in. He is going Kansas City. Andrea is going San Diego.
Uh-oh.
This is a really tough call for me. You know, San Diego has put together some moments.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, Jamal Charles was just ridiculous last weekend. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he can duplicate that. They're at home. Kansas City at home is really hard.
Arrowhead is tough.
Really hard to go against. But it's early in the year. It's not bitter cold there.
Right.
I'm going to go with what I think would be perceived as an upset and take the San Diego Chargers in Kansas City. The second game, talk about two teams that hate each other. We've got Oakland going into Denver. And Oakland looking a little banged up, missing some wide receivers. Yep. It's a tough week for them. So they
won last week.
They're getting 6.5 on the road in New Mile High.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jeff Cannata?
I'm taking Denver. I think Peyton Manning's going to bounce back. Three interceptions in his first 6 passes or something crazy like that. They're at home. It's hard to play at Mile High. I think Peyton's going to have a breakout game. He looked great at the end of the last game. My heart wants to pick Oakland, but my head's telling me the Broncos.
And I can spoil the booth because John Roy told us he's going with Denver.
Yeah.
He's mad that they beat his Steelers.
I'm also going Denver for many of the reasons Jeff mentioned. That's a hard stadium to play in if you're not
Christian
from there.
Yeah, Denver.
More Denver. Let's see. From the email picks, Andrea is with Denver, and James is pulling in Oakland. He's taking the points. He likes the points. I'm going with Denver because I simply think that Oakland doesn't have enough weapons even to get after Denver defense. I just don't know what they do there. Even if their defense is successful at like getting in Peyton's mess up zone or whatever, I still think that Denver at home put the ball on the ground a few times, run it. They can cover 6.5. And then we have the New York Football Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles.
People forget they're the world champs.
And they're getting a point.
Unbelievable.
The Giants are getting a point.
And Eli going had, what, into like Philly. 500 yards last week? Passing? Something like that?
It was in a desperation. It was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, is that 2 weeks ago?
It was 2 weeks ago.
And it doesn't seem like Philly can stop anybody from the pass rush. I'm taking the Giants, and I'm shocked that they're getting points.
Well, just because the Eagles have looked really flat. I mean, the Eagles got shut down by the Cardinals. The Eagles' offense has not been in sync. Outside the first week, Vic does not look all that great this year. So I think you're on good footing there. I'm taking the Giants as well.
I mean, and that's 3 of us.
Another one for the Giants.
Yep, Giants.
Another one for the Giants. Another one for the Giants. Oh, my God, we're all going to be wrong. Andrea Renee emailed me that she would like the Giants over the Steelers. Sorry, Andrea, I love you, but it's just that is what you typed. I just kind of chuckle about it. And James Stevenson took the unanimously elected New York Football Giants. I'm sorry, Giants fans. We did not mean to do that.
I'm sorry, Philly fans.
So then the catch-up games, which I will just fill you in on real quickly, we had both of them picking a really crazy game of New Orleans +7.5 at Green Bay.
Unbelievable.
I know, right?
It's Who would have thought that this game at the beginning of the season, this early in the season, would be two sort of
floundering offenses and unbelievable. It's crazy.
So Andrea went with New Orleans and the points over Green Bay. And James went with New Orleans and the points over Green Bay. And the points, folks, are a lure here. They are luring you into the trap. Green Bay at home after a rough weekend. New Orleans without...
They're pissed off.
They are pissed off. Their defense has allowed under 200 yards passing on average per their first three games. And that is what New Orleans relies on. If they can't pass the ball, they've already had some struggles. Green Bay could potentially just grind them to a pulp. Sorry. And then I think a lot of New Orleans people are just underestimating how much of a loss
the coach?
Bounty Gate has put on them.
Who knew the head coach was such a big deal to any team, really?
Seriously. And then James's extra special catch-up, because he's got to even double up to get on top of that, is I'm having him pick Monday night, which is Chicago.
Hey, your boys.
Going into Dallas, and the Bears getting 3.5. And he's taking the smart money. He's taking the 3.5 and going with the Bears. And I don't know that he's wrong. Forte has had some struggles. We'll see if he's coming back this weekend. The defensive secondary for the Cowboys has looked good, and Cutler can make mistakes. Ware already has a couple of sacks this year. If they get some pressure in on Cutler, 3.5 won't be a near enough points. But if the Cowboys can't get their act together in the first quarter, Chicago's easily got the kind of team that can just, you know, sit down on them, make them make mistakes, do the defense on them just the other way around, get Dallas frustrated, and they won't even need the 3.5. I don't think it's a bad bet. I don't know which way I would go on this. As much as I love my Cowboys, if I was betting, I'd go with my home team. But
you just think it's going to be a close game.
I think it's going to be a good game, yeah. And so James's pick is for the Chicago Football Bears. So there you go, folks. That is your tailgate with the Pick'ems. Hopefully, I'll continue to get better. And if you're in our fantasy league, hopefully you are doing well as well. And don't worry, I had a little talk with Kanati here about setting his lineup. He's going to be back on that. He's going to get on it.
Yes, very busy these last couple of weeks.
All right, folks, thanks very much. And until next week, we are gone. Hope you enjoy the weekend and have great luck with your football teams.